the one place where news, opinions, and entertainment are the way you like it. This is Rant EM Radio.
Want to chat with the guys?
Frank Blink.
That's not how I wanted to announce that either.
This is Brooke's poem about what's going on.
Oh my god, he's about to fucking read it.
Is the poem called Manjaw?
Jesus Christ. My father has a daughter and I have feelings too, and if I knew your father, I would do the same for you.
Motherfucker, fucker.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am no longer straight edge after having to sit here and listen to that.
There was this one comment that I saw where this one dude said, not even remotely good. So I click on his Facebook and all of his photos are him with his two young sons at TNA events. Ah. You know, if they make a wish kiss, I bet they wish they were a Raw.
Friend Blink.
Brother. There. All fixed. That was it. That was the Hogan audio right there, man.
Don't trust Rick Dora.
Something gay must have happened to you and you didn't like it, so now you're like your hate, you're mad against the world. Like, get over it.
When you said something gay must have happened in the past and they didn't like it, I thought you meant like buying Batman Arkham Knight for PC.
No, it's just like
what, why are you so pissed off? Something gay happened to me. I bought the PC version of Batman Arkham Knight.
Friend Blink.
And the looks on their faces, it almost seems like TNA doesn't have fans, they have victims. And there's people who defend it to me, man. There's listeners that we have that defend it to me. They'll privately message me and they'll literally justify everything. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. They'll explain every single illogical
justify
thing.
Justify that lollipop.
You see, you could talk about old wrestling without saturating your show with it and it still works.
Pull of those jabs tonight, man. I should introduce you as Ronda Rousey next time.
Goodness. Rowdy Ronda Rousey.
Like thank you, gay Jesus.
Hey. Casting aside their regular work to try this other thing. You see, that's how you become a comedian. You know, that's some initiative.
What about
nah, don't
me?
Take
and
it.
Then the crowd
no.
goes, what about Beretta?
You can't have that. Can't just give that to Trent Beretta. No way.
Yeah. What the hell was that? I don't even know what that was.
That was...
Oh, man. Home sweet home.
Love nothing it. Like it.
Yeah. You know, no matter what it is that we do, no matter where it is that we go, then nothing beats coming back to the good old Talk Brunch Studios.
Mm-hmm.
Big night tonight. Finally, it's the Walking Dead mid-season finale. It's what everyone's been waiting to hear about, amongst other things. Crazy one, man. Really crazy one. That's one of the few things we'll be discussing. We'll get it out of the way, though.
I wasn't that much of a fan.
There were good things. There were ups and downs about it.
It had its good things. I didn't like the cliffhanger ending, but like you said, we'll get into it.
Yeah. And joining us today, we have Surfer. Good old Surfer from the What Are You Reading comic book show on Rant EM. What's up, Surfer?
How you doing, gentlemen? Thanks for having me on.
No problem, man. It's a special since this is a mid-season finale. This is something that we all have in common, something that we should talk about. And also joining us for the first time, we have Jen. How are you doing today, Jen?
Doing good, man.
Good, good. Same old, same old. I was going to give you guys a breakdown, a little synopsis, a bio on who Jen is and where Jen's from, what her credentials are to be here. But then I thought about it and it was like, no, you're going to have to listen and slowly. If you want to learn who Jen is, find out about Jen, keep listening.
A mystery. Wow.
Yeah.
Yes, I am one little mystery.
Yeah, we're not going to blow our load like into the Badlands and have everything just wishy-washy in one episode.
Oh, giggity.
Don't dump on that show. I like it.
Don't you start with me, Surfer. Don't you start.
Okay, I like the action. Okay,
the action is great. The storyline itself is terrible.
It is. It's just one of those messes that happened that I don't even know where to begin with it anymore, man. I'll give it a couple more episodes and then I'm going to tap out. No commitments to that one. All right, so let's get this Walking Dead done because it's the mid-season finale. I know everyone is really anxious to hear about this. Overall, you said you were disappointed with the episode, right?
Yes.
Before we go into specifics, what would you say, sir? For overall, were you disappointed? Did you enjoy the mid-season finale?
I enjoyed it enough. I'm never really disappointed in these mid-season and season finales because I guess I don't expect what most people expect to see in these other things. So I'm not, disappointed in that way. I know a lot of people expect the season finale and the mid-season finale to just be blood and death everywhere and people dropping left and right. I don't necessarily need to see that every time they get to that point in the season.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
Good point. And I guess I'm one of those people that is what I expected of it. And when I didn't get it, it was just like huge letdown.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from too. It could go both ways. So we're going to take it scene by scene as always. And this one's special. Because we have good old Sam, who's upstairs. And apparently, this is the only music that Sam has in his entire house. They mentioned this on The Talking Dead. But this kid doesn't have, like, any Aerosmith or Nirvana or anything. The only disc he has is this
music
song.
From Fallout 4. Got it.
Yeah, exactly. Music from Fallout 4. Doesn't even really make any sense to me. But yeah, he has Tiptoe Through the Tulips, the 1944 version. Nick Lucas version. Wonderful. So that's what the kid's listening to.
Tiny Tim version?
What was that?
That wasn't the Tiny Tim version?
No, it definitely was not. The Tiny Tim version has a higher pitch, and it's years later. This was the old school one that the kid had. But anyway, he's up there, and he's putting down an empty plate from one of his meals because he still refuses to come downstairs after all the shit that he's been through. And I sort of get the metaphor that's happening here because later on in this episode, they're going to be tiptoeing through the tulips, if you will.
Okay.
Because that's sort of where it closes. So I thought that was cool. But yeah, the Fallout 4 shit, I agree with you, McWrestling. It was odd to me. But that boy still ain't coming downstairs, not for shit. and he's up there drawing a picture of him tied to a tree where like, basically the way that Carol described him, where he was going to be tied to a tree if he ever said anything, where no one could find him and walkers would rip him apart. And that's what he's coloring in.
And now, how old is he?
That's a good question. I would say he's probably like, what, 8?
And how old was Carl when this show started?
I believe about the same age. No, a little bit older, I'd say.
Yeah, I don't even remember the ages in this.
I'm going to say Carl was probably 12.
Okay.
Give or take.
There's a big contrast in the two children.
Well, there's that. You got to factor in that while Carl was younger, he has gone through. He's been out there, so he's seen what's out there. This kid has been sheltered, so he's seen none of this.
Right. And you were going to say, Surfer?
I'm saying, like, Carl quickly adjusted to this world. This kid, he has no clue. It's like, if this wasn't a TV show, they would probably kill him off a lot quicker than he may end up dying. But because it's TV and people may not, like, kids have died on the show, but I don't think they're too quick to show kids die. Like, this kid actually should die the way he's handling things.
Yeah, he's handling things really poorly.
And, have you read the books?
No, I don't read the books because I'm afraid of horror. So
you're afraid of horror and you're watching The Walking Dead. Yeah,
this is an anomaly. Trust me.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
That's strange.
Well, just a heads up. Keep tuned in.
Yeah, I guess good. But anyway, when it pans to his window, the ants are coming in and they're consuming the cookie that he left on the plate. And that is the metaphor of what's going to happen to...
I thought that was the metaphor and the foreshadowing. Like, it was a foreshadowing of the walkers breaking into the town and pretty much just taking over everything.
Yeah, because Alexandria just became one big cookie that's half eaten already.
Mm-hmm.
So that was sort of where they were going with that whole thing. And that's the prologue to the episode. So then we wind up where we were last week with the tower coming down. And the cool thing about the tower coming down, both in the last episode and this one, not only the effect and what it meant and how detrimental it is, but I like the quiet before the storm, like literally right after the tower fell, there's almost this calm before the storm feeling where there's nothing but dust. You don't hear shit. And then suddenly the walkers just start rushing in, you know, and there's like hundreds of them everywhere. And it just looks like total chaos. And Rick runs forward telling the Alexandrians to get back. He shoots a couple of walkers as he himself is rushing back. Rosita and Tyra help Tobin, who was knocked down, I'm assuming, by the impact of the tower hitting Alexandria, and they retreat away with him.
And yeah, Rick, I think continues. you actually see him hit the ground in the previous episode.
Right, right. And then Rick continues to fire at the walkers, and Deanna comes rushing out with her bad aim, and she shoots at a walker. And at that moment, I think it was giving us a good message of the fact that she's definitely not equipped for this. Once she did a little pock pock with her gun, it was like, oh God, she's going to die out there. Somebody get Deanna. And, you know, Rick tells her that she needs to get back, to which she responds, we need to get back. And I give her credit. You know, she's always been one of my favorite characters. You know how I feel about her. Great script, great chemistry. Her and Rick leading that whole town together has been a powerful thing. But she's not good in combat, man. She's not good in combat at all. So then, meanwhile, we have Carol and Morgan, who are both running down the street when Carol trips on the bullets that are on the floor. And I'm guessing those were Ron's bullets, like either that or the wolf left bullets on the floor at some point, I'm assuming.
But the wolf didn't have any guns, remember?
Right, so it had to be Ron's bullets?
It would probably Ron, yeah.
Yeah, he can't even hold on to bullets that he hasn't loaded into the fucking chamber yet. He's so irresponsible. And she picks them up.
It looked like he had originally taken just enough bullets to, like maybe 5-6 bullets. And I don't want to jump too far ahead, but when he has the scuffle later on, he pretty much fires off like all the shots.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't know where they are from though. But she picks them up, and she gets up and continues to run with Morgan back into the house that he's keeping the wolf in without her realizing it. And then meanwhile, Deanna ironically winds up saving Rick from a walker that's lunging at him while he's attacking another one. And she winds up falling onto like a buzzsaw that cuts her leg.
Yeah.
And then Rick pulls her off of the buzzsaw, and then him and Deanna retreat. And that was rough because at that point, I already knew that she was bit. It was like, to me, guaranteed. You even see a split second when he pulls her away where you see the blood on her side.
And see, I missed that. So great. It caught me by surprise when they do reveal that later on.
No, I was here and I said it with the people I was watching when I went up a bit. They're like, are you sure? I said, yeah, I saw the blood on her ribs.
You should know once the zombies touched her that she was done. Like certain characters, like if a zombie gets anywhere within like an inch, they're automatically bit. It's just like physics.
Yeah, it's the rules of the game. And I knew it was going to be coming soon. Not just because of the comic, but it just felt like one of those things, unfortunately. So meanwhile, Maggie's running from walkers and she falls down and no scopes a few of them. And then she manages to climb up the ladder to one of the watch posts, and the walkers are reaching for her and they're pulling her, trying to pull her down the ladder, but they wind up pulling down the ladder instead, and she's hanging desperately. But she makes it to the top of the tower. And as Maggie's laying on her back, catching her breath, she catches sight of Glenn's green balloons in the air, almost as if they were there to remind her that Glenn's alive and not to give up hope. So moving along, we go to Eugene, who's doing the Samwell Tarly thing. And he's hiding out in plain sight, leaning up against a wall. And any of you Game of Thrones fans out there are going to know what I'm talking about when Sam did that. But yeah, he's literally out there. I literally expected a walker to look over at him and laugh. Like,
that's what I was, not laugh, but I was waiting. I was like, at what point is one of them eventually going to turn over and see him like just standing right there? And what's his reaction going to be when that happens?
Can somebody give him a cup of courage?
Yeah, right. I mean, give him something. But he winds up hearing a walkie-talkie go off, so he goes to pick it up. And then the sound attracts walkers, but Tara and Rosita are quick to save him from them. And then the three of them run into a garage that's attached to one of the nearby homes, and they pull down the sliding garage door to barricade themselves between them and the walkers. And they're standing there looking at this giant horde of walkers still pressed up against the garage door where they could see through the glass and stuff. And it's just a shitty situation for those guys.
Isn't it a bit surprising to you that the garage door held up better than the entire wall?
Yeah, for a moment. I actually was jokingly saying when this happened that wouldn't it be funny now that everyone's barricaded in these little houses and stuff, if Rick just gave the same speech. He was like, these walls will hold. The question is whether or not you will. And like, you told us that last time about the other walls. But no, I guess it was just further. There were a few weird things about physics there, like the doorknob, which we'll get into in a little bit. But so next we're back with Deanna and Rick, who have now met up with Michonne, Father Gabriel, Ron, and Carl in the middle of the street as though running from walkers. And Michonne takes a few out with her sword, and then suddenly everyone's surrounded. And then they hear, like, nearby gunfire, and it's Jesse saving their asses by shooting them a path to freedom. And she leaves them back to her house, where they rush in, and they close the door. And we get a bird's-eye shot of Alexandria for the first time, and you just see the walkers running wild. Like, they are everywhere. Like, it's overrun.
You know what little thing stood out to me at that whole part? To see Father Gabriel running with the machete, and it looks like he was actually killing some of them too. And you actually do see him like cut one in the face before they get to the house.
Well, that goes to show the machete school pays off, you see? It's an Alexandria.
Yeah,
man.
But it's like, remember, he was Eugene at one point where he was deathly afraid to even kill these things.
Mm-hmm. Well, by now he'd be dead if he wasn't already adapting to the situation. So I think he's starting to realize that.
How do you explain Eugene then?
Well, Eugene, I think we're still going to see some more with him. You know, they're not going to rush too many characters to the front lines. Give it time. Give Eugene time.
Now, you showed me something about the book. It looked like they deviated from what supposedly the book with Father Gabriel. Or unless it's happened yet.
Yeah, they deviated from the No Way Out arc. For those of you guys that have asked me specifically, we won't talk about the comic book deviations until we're done talking about the episode. Kind of a lot of you guys are like, we love the reviews, but just don't talk about the comic. I can't not talk about the comic because that's sort of what we do on these shows. But we'll wait till the end and I'll warn you guys when we're going to talk about what Surfer's talking about, because I know some of you are interested in that. And it is interesting how they did change certain things, but not other things. But anyway, so next we went to Glenn and Enid. And they're watching helplessly from right across the other side of the railroad tracks as Alexandria is being consumed. And Glenn talks about getting in from the west wall due to the fact that the walkers have filled in from the east wall. But Enid's pretty much ready to peace out. And he has to convince her to keep going. And she tells him that this is what always happens. And Glenn tries to convince her that it's not over and that their friends are still inside of there, including his pregnant wife. And that if she's going to go, go. But that's how you lose people even after they're gone. So Enid has like a little bit of soul searching there to do. And while
that seemed
doing,
to hit her too when he mentioned that Maggie was pregnant.
Yeah.
It kind of looked like she didn't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I'm sure Enid has a soul. She's just freaked out by everything.
Yeah.
You know, so just she's doing the best that she can do. And then we transition back to one of your favorite characters, Mick Wrestlin, who hasn't budged from the spot that he was in the first fucking place. And he's literally, at this point, this kid literally looks sick with fear. I gotta give the actor credit, because this is a great portrayal of someone being sick with fear.
Like, yeah, it looked like he wasn't sleeping properly. You could kind of see bags under his eyes and everything.
He was frightening. He looked like a walker bit him. He was so scared. He was fucking shook. I've never seen anything like this before. He was like five shades wider than he already was.
Yeah.
You know? And then if you think that he's not scared enough, this is where I kind of started to feel bad for even him. He sees his mom come up the stairs with Rick and the gang and injured Deanna, and they're screaming and shit. Keep in mind, this music's still playing in the background for whoever didn't watch the episode. So this kid's watching fucking people coming in injured. He knows there's zombies outside. He sees people with machetes. And like, you know, it's just, and we see his perspective where he's seeing it in slow motion in his head as all of this is happening. And like, his mom's telling him to pretend that he's someone that's not scared, but he looks fucking scared. So I don't think this pretending worked out.
He's extra terrified of Rick.
He's terrified. I mean, he just looks terrified in general. I don't think that he, I mean, who wouldn't he be terrified of at that point? Everyone's covered in blood and carrying guns and screaming.
No, I think he's more terrified of Rick because, well, you know, Rick killed his father.
Yeah, maybe. You know, the bond that a son has with their father, it's kind of hard to break that. So Rick is the devil in this little kid and the other brother, too.
Because it looked like he was scared. And then when he got a glimpse of the back of Rick, you'll notice like his whole world just seemed to slow down.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it adds insult to injury. Because, you know, he's also scared of the monsters. I'm pretty sure that if the monsters came, he'd be right fucking behind Rick's leg. You know, it doesn't matter what traumatizing things happened with his dad and the bond. And I don't know, man.
Like with this kid, I feel like at one point he'd be conflicted to the point where it was like, if Rick said, come to me, and he's standing on the left side of the room and the walkers are coming at the other side of the room, he would stand there frozen in fear and wouldn't know where to go.
Yeah, I hope you're wrong.
Well, you know, maybe Rick's the bigger monster in this kid's eyes, because these zombies haven't done anything to affect him yet. Rick has.
Yeah, I gather that. It's like he knows they're bad. Like, they're on the other side of the wall because they're bad. They're eating people. You're not supposed to get, like, you're not supposed to get near him. But he's literally, like, he's in the room with Rick, this guy who he knows that killed his father. And this kid just seems like he's not prepared for this world at all.
None of them really are.
Nah, he just seems extra in my book.
We switch over to Morgan and Carol. And Morgan's checking Carol's head because she's busting open from that bump that she took on the outside. And Morgan calls her not trusting anyone anymore. And she says that she trusts some people more than others, but that he's dead last on the list. And she says that she doesn't trust him, but she never thought that he was lying. And then Morgan looks out the window and he tells her that there's walkers filling the streets. And she tries to get up, but Morgan tells her that she probably has a concussion and to just stay down. And that whatever they have to settle, it can wait, because it has to. And then meanwhile, right below Carol, the camera literally pans right below the floor that she's standing on. We have Denise and the wolf. And the wolf is saying that he doesn't think Morgan is coming back. And then he tells Denise not to be afraid. And she's concerned about the injured people outside. But she asks him if after the things that he's done, does he really belong here? And then he says that he freed the people here and that he's just going to use what's left. And then the wolf tells Denise about his infection and says that he cut himself on a rusty car bumper when he was looting it?
Yeah, was it a bumper or rusty windshield? Something rusty. Yeah. He cut himself on it.
Yeah, and then he says that he's not sure if this is going to kill him, but that he's done his part and that the world will take care of the rest. And Denise asks him to see the wound. And then this dude reveals this Robert Baratheon-style wound, dude, where it's like... When he lifted his shirt, it literally was like, I could smell the death, Ned. You know, like, what in the fuck? It was like...
Yeah, you could see, like, it looked like it was pussing up and everything already.
Yeah, I was thinking, I actually said out loud, give him milk of the poppy.
Oh, shit.
There's so many people who must be like, what the hell is this Game of Thrones references going on here? I don't get it. But yeah, this motherfucker needed milk of the poppy. That's all I know. When I saw how wounded he was... He was in some serious trouble. So one annoying minor gripe that I have with this, and I have to have him because we are reviewing it, is that he didn't call for Start Reacting Infected until after he revealed the wound. And I think that's a little cliche. Like, he was talking fine. He seemed perfectly okay. Then when she asked, let me see the wound, all of a sudden he exposed it. And then he's like, it was like, you weren't coughing.
I don't think that's bad acting on the show's part. That could be just him, like, playing mind games with her. Like, he shows it to her, and in that moment she's like, oh shit, you're like badly injured. And then he starts coughing and he acting like selling. He's weak. And, he's selling it. So
in character, the wolf
from her.
In character, the wolf is a bad seller.
I guess.
Oh boy.
Like, I don't think that was bad writing on the show's part. I think it was just him like, hey, let me show her, and like, while she's in shock, I'll start coughing and stuff, and I'll get sympathy from her. Maybe she'll be the one that set me free.
Too many layers of psychology in there, and I don't know if he's that smart. He did carve a big W into his head. But, so.
Sometimes you gotta dress the part, man. Look at how Carolyn, when she took him out, she was literally in the wolf's clothing, took the blood, wiped it on her forehead and everything. It's all just a role play to her. It's a role play to him.
Yeah, but she washed that off afterwards. He can't wash that W off. He's screwed.
Maybe that's an initiation and he had to do it.
Whatever. Fuck the wolf. My perspective is with Carol. We should just go stab him in the face and then bury him and not think about too much.
She didn't say nothing about burying him.
Yeah, or burn him, whatever. But anyway, Denise is examining his wound, and then she starts to join the Morgan Club because she's telling him that he wasn't born this way and that he can change. I'm sick of this he can change shit that's happening in this world. Like, we don't have time right now for people to change. Unfortunately, I'm not with Team Morgan right now.
There's literally a zombie attack going on right now.
It's time to kill him.
Yeah.
Yeah, Morgan is like, he's wrong on this on so many levels. I'll get into it later, but...
You know what the problem is with Morgan? I respect his philosophy. Sure, whatever, Morgan. If you feel you can't kill people, even if they're gonna fucking kill and rape you, all life is precious, blah, blah, blah. I can respect your opinion, but the problem here is that there's still a hierarchy and this is still a town, and they do have cops. This may be a small community, but there are cops and there are rules. And since it is not your community and these are not your houses, you can do that pacifistic bullshit somewhere else. just not here where these people don't want that. You know,
he's starting to push his thoughts onto everybody else, and that's where he's wrong.
Exactly. Take the wolf and leave if you feel that way.
It was just funny to see when you jump back to when everybody was running for cover and he was fighting off some of the walkers. He wasn't even stabbing him. He was just like smacking him in the face with the bow staff.
Well, right. Well, Morgan's swinging that and he takes them out when he hits them in the head. Like his cranium hits completely destroy them. He's not going to leave walkers alive, you know? But so we cut to Rick's team and Michonne is tending to Deanna's leg. And then she finds out this is where the big revelation that she was bitten in the ribs. And then Deanna goes, well, shit. Which is a great reaction.
I love that line. I was like, only her.
I'm going to miss that lady, man.
Yeah.
So Rick goes and tells Jesse that Deanna doesn't have long. And you can see that Rick was crushed by this development. And it's funny to look at it that way and compare it to the Rick that first showed up here. That was like, if we don't lock these people, we're going to take the town from them. You know, it's really cool to see him like, these are his people now. Like she sort of says there, you know. So I feel he's grown fond of Deanna a lot like we have as the viewers. Yeah,
she's like his new Herschel in a way.
Yeah, which automatically puts her on a death list because every time we get a good soul in this fucking series, they have to try to rip ours out, right?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he tells Jesse that he has food and that he has plans to get to the armory and fire some flares to lead the walkers away. And we go to Michonne, who's still talking to Deanna and tells her that she looked at the plans that she gave Rick and, you know, she thinks that it can work out even now. And Michonne claims that she gets it now. And Michonne asks Deanna about that saying that she always says. And she basically says that it comes down to working with her family for a better future and how she got to do what she wanted down to the very end. And then she asks Michonne, what does she want for herself? And Michonne says that she doesn't know. And Deanna says that she better find out.
I don't know. This whole scene kind of bugged me just because it seemed like they had like this bond, like they've known each other for years, and it was like she's losing her mother right now. It's like it seemed too instant to me, the bond that they had in that moment.
And this is the reason why many episodes ago I told you that we needed a season of filler in Alexandria before we went to the No Way Out storyline.
Right, because they skip so much stuff. Like we said, we're not going to get into the book, but there's a lot of stuff that happened in the book.
And I feel all of these deaths that are happening now and all of these bad things, it would have been a bigger deal.
It's not going to be as impactful.
It would have been a bigger deal if we had a season of Alexandria where there were just walkers and different stories happen. Almost like that made-up story they did back in season one or two where they went to like a laboratory and the guy blew himself up in it. Like, or when they did the thing with the hospital with Beth. There was no hospital. There was no Beth. These are all made-up stories, but they were good stories. I think we needed one more of those before we hit this story.
I think the fans are impatient when it comes to, you know, plotting out a story. They just want to see the guts and the head smashing.
Yeah, I get that. But, you know, they should have given them that in a different way. The No Way Out storyline is a big arc in the Walking Dead comic book story. And I think we hit it too fast. And I do feel I see what you're saying, McWrestling, where it's kind of like there are a lot of things that went wrong here as far as the Deanna bonding with Michonne. It didn't have the effect it would have had if this was a season later. The more potential victims of the situation that are going to happen aren't going to be as impactful as they could have been if they would have taken this a different route, you know? And
exactly.
And that to me is sort of disappointing. And I do think that they jumped the gun a little bit with this at the speed that it went. But you know, what are we going to do? We're here already and the fans want what they want. So, Carl follows Ron downstairs to the garage and he's crying, saying that Enid and all of them are going to die and that she's dead. And Carl tells him that his dad's going to figure something out. And that's when Ron says bullshit and that Carl's dad is just going to get more people killed because that's what he does. That's what he is. He's a killer. And then Carl tells him, your dad's a killer too. And that's almost straight out of the comic books. This isn't a spoiler. It's just almost straight out of the comic books. Ron and Carl are a lot younger in the comic books, but he does say, your dad killed my dad, to which Carl responds and says, so my dad kills a lot of people. You know, so that was just sort of the show version of that. And Ron is clearly losing it in this version. Like Ron, you know, it's just, he says that everyone is dead and he says, including Carl, and he goes to shoot Carl. He goes to pull his gun and then Carl and him have a fight and they're struggling for the gun. And then Ron attacks Carl with a shovel. Carl ducks out of the way and the shovel winds up hitting the window. And then the glass shattering gets the attention of the walkers that are outside and of Rick and Jesse who are upstairs. And then Rick takes unusually long to break the doorknob with a fucking axe because not for nothing, you can take one of those out with a hammer and it wouldn't take that long. So this is another thing of weird physics.
I mean, technically, I've locked myself out of my own room and I've kicked the door in with like one or two kicks. I feel like if had he done that, it would have broke the door down faster than him taking the axe to the door handle.
Yeah, I think he could have just kicked it down too. I mean,
or anything, but an axe should have taken that door knob off in one swipe.
I locked myself out of my room when I was like a kid, like 18, 19. Him as a grown ass man, he should have been able to kick that door down with one hit.
Yeah, I don't think there's really a top of the line locks on these doors.
Call a locksmith. Anyway, so Carl is trying to barricade the door, but the walkers already made it into the garage thanks to the noise, and now they have to retreat back into the house, and they're trying to block the door with a couch, and Rick asks what the hell happened, and then Carl covers for Ron, and Ron tells Jesse that the ruckus that they heard was them fighting the walkers. And when they go into the upstairs bedroom, Carl pulls out his gun on Ron. He tells him to give him the gun, and he disarms the motherfucker. And he says, you know, basically, my dad did kill your dad, but there's something you should know. Your dad was an asshole.
Second favorite line of the episode.
Yeah. And then Michonne and the rest of the group are watching the barricade, thanks to Ron, and the walkers literally have one foot in the door, and Rick hears Judith crying upstairs, and he goes to look, and he sees Deanna isn't in the spot where he left her. So we're all thinking the worst, that she died, turned into a walker, and now she's eating Judith. But Rick goes into Judith's room, and he finds Deanna hanging over the playpen, and he's about to hit her with an axe, and she shouts, "It's still me!" And then she says that she just wanted to see Judith one last time, and then Rick picks her up and lays her on the bed, and Rick tells Deanna that from now on someone needs to be with her. And Deanna gives Rick a note that she wrote for Spencer and one that she wrote for Maggie. And she asks Rick to look out for Spencer the way he looks out for his people. And then she tells Rick that they're all his people. And Rick's like, you know, well, we haven't had a chance to make it like that yet. And she's like, but that's how it is, you know? And she says that she didn't run out there and help him because he's a good father or because she likes him or because he can grow one hell of a beard. But because he's one of them, and that's the right answer, is what she tells him, which was a damn good speech, and that's why I'm going to miss Deanna when this is all said and done. So we switch to Tara, Rosita, and Eugene, and they're still inside the garage, worried about life, contemplating existence, and Rosita's asking if Alexandria's done, and then Tara says that a place like this has a price and that they're going to have to fight for it, even if people die, and you know Tara's whole gung-ho speeches that she gives.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rosita says that it feels like Abraham's dead. And then Tara reassures her that she didn't see it, so he's probably not dead. And then Eugene volunteers to pick the lock behind them so that they could get into the main house from the garage. As that's happening, we switch back to Carol and Morgan, who are still in the same spot with Morgan watching over her. And Carol looks out of it, half-conscious, and Morgan puts down his staff, and he goes to peek down to the basement steps. And suddenly he hears the lights cut off behind him, and Carol's gone. So she was clearly faking how injured she really was. And when he comes back upstairs to find her, she comes from out of nowhere and pushes him on his ass and rushes down to the basement to see what he has going on down there. So go, Carol.
Yeah, because my whole thing that I thought she was going to be the death that we were going to get in this episode, because I don't know if we said it on the last episode or you and I just had the conversation as casually. But we did discuss how you thought Carol was going to be one of the characters that was going to go. And I thought, like, the concussion thing, if she does have a concussion, it makes sense. It's going to be a part where they're going to have to fight their way out. She's going to be badass Carol, but then the concussion's going to kick in and she's going to get bitten.
Yeah, Carol blows them out.
Yeah, they couldn't do it, especially if it was thanks to Morgan. I'd never forgive him, man. Don't screw me over. That'd be a double screw you to us. So, no. We switch back to Rick and the team, and the walkers break in from all sides, and they overrun the house. And then Michonne takes a few of them out, and the team falls back to the stairs with the couch between them. And I have a dark sense of humor, so when they were there with the couch between them on the steps, it made me think of that episode of Friends where Ross is trying to get the couch up to his house. And they're all like, he's like, pivot, pivot, pivot. And they're getting pissed at him. I was thinking, this is ironic. But anyway, they have the couch between them and the walkers. Like, the walkers are on the ground, and there's just this fucking couch on the steps there. And it was just really, I felt really bad because the house is lost. When you're on your own steps with your couch, you're fucked.
Yeah.
So then the niece and the wolf, we go back to them in the basement, and Carol comes downstairs with a knife and tells Denise to get away from him, and Morgan follows her downstairs, and there's this big Carol-Morgan standoff that I did not want to happen because there's too much shit going on while I'm watching this. The whole entire town is overrun with walkers. Are you guys really going to do this right now?
And again, at this point, I'm freaking out because I'm like, okay, it's not – the concussion thing's not going to get her outside. She's going to turn her back on the wolf. And like when you think everything's like all said and done, the wolf's going to pick up the knife and like stab her or some crazy shit.
Jesus. So we go back to Rick and the team, and he's pulling a dead walker up the steps with him. And he tells them that the plan is to cover themselves in those blankets and sheets and then douse themselves with walker guts to mask their humanity. And then they'll be able to walk outside amongst the walkers covered in their guts to the armory. And then Rick tells them that he's done this before and he knows that it works and that anyone that stays in the house is going to die. And then Father Gabriel asks, but what about Deanna, who, as we know, is already bitten, injured, and half fucking on her way to being a zombie. And Mick and Michonne share that look, like, you know, that damn, she's going to die look.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it really sucks. So we get back to Carol and Morgan, who are still amidst their standoff. And Morgan is doing all of his life is precious speeches about how he will not kill. And at this point, it's sort of pissing me off just a little bit. And Carol tells Morgan that she doesn't want to have to kill him. And then Morgan says that he won't let her, which was an Eastman throwback.
Yeah, yeah. I was just waiting for him to say, let's just let this all blow over and I'll go make some cheese and we can all sit down and laugh about it.
Yeah, not going to happen. This is Carol. He's not going to laugh about this. So Michonne and Deanna, we get back to them and Michonne tells Deanna that the walkers are getting in and that the rest of them are going to have to go. And Michonne offers to end it for Deanna. But Deanna says that she's not ready to die yet, but that when she is, she'll do it herself. And she shows the gun that she has. And she says that a Latin phrase that means someday this pain will be useful to you. And Michonne and Deanna say their goodbyes. And Michonne thanks Deanna for believing. And Deanna says that she still believes. And they leave her there. And then we get back to Rick and the team, who are covering themselves in guts. This is a great series to watch while you're eating, people. But yeah, they're ripping open walkers and covering themselves in guts. And Jesse breaks into shit-stained Sam's room. We're going to call him shit-stained Sam because by now he must have shit himself. and, you know, she basically tells him the bad news. You know, she's telling this little kid, listen, you're going to have to cover yourself in these zombie guts and we're going to walk amongst the monsters. And he looks really, really upset about that, you know. I feel for the guy, though. You know, this guy's not really equipped for
what
this.
What did I say in the episode about the something bad happening to you? Get over it.
Don't he have a little toy they could bring with him covering guts so to keep him passive? I mean, like,
listen, I don't know what kind of
situation at sir, all.
Surfer, I don't know. Surfer, I don't know what kind of fucking toys that you have, but I need to come to your house. Because
you got to have an action figure or two somewhere.
What music is he listening to again? I doubt that.
listen. I don't think that an action figure is going to distract me from the fact that I'm walking among zombies and covered in guts. You know, it would have to be one hell of an action figure.
What action figure do for the mindset of a little kid? I mean, if you'd have gave me my G.I. Joe at 8, I'm happy, you know, Kung Fu grip and everything.
Now I remember, man, I remember having my Power Rangers, my G.I. Joes, my Ninja Turtles and having like a wrestling battle royal with these things. So, yes, the imagination of a kid is amazing.
There you go. Where's the Hulk Hogan doll at?
I know myself as a kid.
Like Hulk Hogan.
I know myself as a kid, and even the actual Power Rangers being there wouldn't have made that situation any better. I'm covered in guts, and I'm walking through zombies. Nothing about this is ever going to be okay again.
Not even Batman?
Nothing, man. Nothing. I really feel for it. As a little kid. I love how that was your excuse. I wish you guys would have been in The Walking Dead, you know, like, give him a toy.
Like, take your Batman. Batman fights everything.
Take the Game Boy, but just keep the volume down. Playing fucking Kid Icarus under the sheet of guts. Fantastic. Oh, Lord. Anyway, so Carol tells Morgan that she'll kill him and the wolf because she doesn't want anyone else to die. And then it turns into a fight between the two of them. And then Morgan body slams Carol unconscious. That was a shock, right?
I laughed at that scene a little bit. Like harder than I should have. I don't know. I found it hilarious.
Yeah, I guess we can confirm who the better fighter is, but I still
like
Carol.
We knew he was the better fighter.
Yeah, he gave her a body slam, man.
For as good as a character Carol has become, she's still kind of frail.
You got to remember, she's a housewife, and she's a battered housewife that adapted to the situation around her, whereas Morgan, he had his time to train with Eastman.
Yeah, all of that counterattacking that he was doing got him his F times one up, and then he just fucking laid it in.
Pretty much.
Just like, got you. It happens, Kara, what happens? You got to watch those meters.
I feel like I should throw in a Ronda Rousey joke here, but I'm going to leave it alone.
Yeah, leave the poor woman alone. So Morgan body slams Carol unconscious, and then the wolf KOs him with his own staff from behind and holds Denise by knife point. So just like we were worried, thanks to Morgan's mercy, the wolf now has Denise. And we switch back to Rick and the team, who are now going down the stairs covered in Walker guts. And Father Gabriel offers to get Judith, and he says that he won't give up. He won't turn back no matter what happens. And then Rick responds, yeah, I know. But he does it in like a condescending way, saying like, yeah, I know your punk ass won't look back if something happens. You know, he doesn't mean it like he's crediting the guy.
It was funny because I remember that's another scene from the book, not with him and Father Gabriel, but again, another thing missed out from the book where Rick explains that they have to walk through this whole horde, and he was like, don't look back, like just keep your head forward.
That's good advice.
Yeah.
So Denise and the wolf are basically back in the basement, and the wolf is cutting his binds free, and Denise tells him not to kill her or anyone else, since according to him, they're already dead. Why bother to kill them? And then as she's trying to negotiate for her life, Tara, Rosita, and Eugene come in, because guess what? The lock that they were trying to pick from the garage they were in was outside of the same fucking house this whole time. So all of this has been happening in the same house, and we've just been unaware of it. So then it turns out, basically, that the wolf wants their guns. He wants all of their stuff. So taking Denise by knife point, they kick their guns over him, and now we have a wolf that has knives and guns. So he holds Denise by gunpoint, and he leaves the house out into the horde of walkers. And they tell him that he's not going to make it out there, and then he says, we'll see. And he leaves with Denise.
Very foolish of them. Very,
very.
Very. Do you know what pissed me off in that whole point? Part one was Denise. When he was busy cut, like, you know, well, you don't know, but you're assuming at this point that as soon as this guy cuts himself free, he's going to murder you. My instinct would have been to pick up the fucking gun that he left on the floor and shoot him before he could cut his hands free. At that point, that didn't happen. You also figure in when he has her with the knife to her throat and he's like, pass her guns forward. The mentality would have been one of them, whoever knows that they're the better shot, they get the headshot on him. Like they get the aim on the headshot. Then as the other one throws their gun first, you take the headshot and take him down. At least that's how I would handle it.
You think like me. I got mad at both Tara and Rosita there because I thought one of them had a clean shot.
I figured Rosita would have blew his fucking head off.
I thought one of them had a clean shot, and then they just gave up their weapon, so now he gets away, and that really sucks.
And so, look, sorry, you wouldn't want the girl to die, but once you give up your weapons, everybody in the room can die.
Pretty much. It was like, this guy's unstable. Once you pass him the guns, he could have like ducked down, picked up the gun, been like, you idiots, and then just shot everybody and left the room.
I don't know. A lot of people upset me in this episode. The kids upset me. You know, Ron being an asshole and starting the fight upset me. You know, I know Matt was looking forward to hearing us talk about this because I know a lot of the children upset him in the episode too. So it was just a mess.
We know what Ron needs.
Ron needs is just, to die.
He just needs to rub up on somebody, that's all.
He needs to rub up on Ina. Too bad it's too late, Ron. You're going to die a virgin.
Yeah, anyway, Ina's the new Sophia, as we said in the previous episode.
Yeah, so then the big climactic scene we get is just a montage of everything. We see Rick and team walking through the herd of walkers. We see Glenn and Ina climb a tree, and we see Maggie, from where they are, they see Maggie stuck to the guard post, surrounded by walkers. Deanna is about to shoot herself when she hears walkers right outside of her door, and she decides to make one last stand, and instead of shooting herself, she takes out as many walkers as she can till the gun is empty, and then she lets out a war cry. And then Rick and team are now standing outside, camouflaged in walker guts, slowly starting to walk down the steps to the armory. And they all join hands, which is a very, very important thing for comic book readers. Know why. It is very important to remember that they all join hands. Especially is important to remember is that Jesse is holding on to Carl. And she's also holding on to Sam. The last thing that we hear is Sam.
Shit stained Sam
calling out for his mom as they're trying to stay quiet and not draw attention to the walkers. He's like, Mom, Mom, Mom. And if they're honoring the comics, he's probably going to tell her that he has to pee. And comic book readers know how this scene ends. It's a nightmare, but they ended right there. And some of the complaints I'm hearing from some of you guys is that you don't like the fact that they ended the mid-season finale in the middle of the arc because there's still some big scenes coming. But I don't mind it that much. I don't think that it's that terrible. I think that it was done really well. And overall, I think it was a good episode.
It was a good episode. I am one of those people that didn't like that it ended right there. And I knew it was ending too. Like, I wasn't even watching the time. I was like truly invested into the episode. And as soon as I saw him start going, Mom, Mom, and they're doing the slowdown, I was like, ah, oh, these fuckers are going to end it right here.
Now, this is the first time that this season has been just one continuous long story, correct? I mean, like in the past, there's been multiple part stories, but usually it goes from story to story. This is the like everything that's happened in these, what, 8 episodes has just been all one long event.
Yeah, that's been spanning over just a few hours.
So this probably won't be resolved to the end of the second part of the season, if I'm assuming, right? I mean, it's what, a couple of thousand zombies they got to deal with?
Yeah, they have a lot to deal with.
Yeah, just about, yeah.
Yeah, that's not going to be done overnight. I mean...
But you gotta factor in. You still have Daryl still out there with, I'm about to call him Seamus, with Abraham.
Yeah, we have a whole there's a whole bunch of people all over the place.
They're still there. So for all you know, when we come back to the next season, the opening scene, well, Rick and I know what the opening scene is going to be. But after all that pans out, it could be the other group rushing in to help them clear out the whole horde that's attacking the city.
We'll see.
There's a couple things I got to point out. Like, when the zombies first come into the town, okay, they're coming in from one direction. But yet, right. It seemed like everybody got surrounded with in a matter of no time. It's like they're running away from the horde, and here come zombies from this angle and another angle. How did they get surrounded so fast?
You got to factor in that when the tower fell down, no matter where they were at, they heard the noise, and they all just pretty much gathered around there. Because when we say it's thousands, it's not literally just 1,000. It could be like 2,000 of them, 3,000 of them.
They're all flooding in from one direction.
Right.
But yet, zombies got behind them so quickly. It shouldn't have happened that fast. They were all running from the zombies, only coming in through one hole. It's not like the entire wall fell down.
So you had to also factor in when the wall did fall down, those of them that were outside ran towards the wall to see the damage, or they were already standing within the area.
They're completely surrounded. Otherwise, Maggie and Aiden wouldn't have needed to try to go through the sewer to get past the horde. They would have just went out the back door. They're surrounded from all angles. And when everything came in, the walkers rushed the area. You've seen how fast it could happen because it's happened in the farm and the prison. Once the horde comes, it's pretty much going to overwhelm everything. It doesn't take long.
And, okay, well, Maggie was never in danger because she's pregnant. They're not going to show her get ripped apart while she's pregnant. They're never going to go that far on TV. Carol and Morgan, both of them were in the wrong for that whole situation. But listen, everybody likes Morgan, but he's been broken from day one, okay? He couldn't take care of his wife, which got his son killed, which made him go off the deep end. And now he's supposed to be fixed, but he's not fixed. He's still a broken person, even though he's zen as can be. This I can't take a life is broken. He's a broken person.
It's a flawed philosophy for this world. That's for sure.
It's a flawed philosophy for him, but then you got to factor in everyone's a little bit broken. I mean, Rick lost Laurie also.
But
Maggie lost her father.
It's not the philosophy. He's never been right. He's never been right. And he just goes from one extreme to another.
Yeah, I see that. I mean, I definitely agree with you there. It's like he said, though, in the previous episode, it's not like he isn't tempted. He wants to kill these people. But it's almost like an alcoholic going for their first drink. He doesn't want to go back to being that killer. So it's like it's almost a restraint. It's a discipline for him. I just don't think he should impose it on other people. And I don't think he should impose it in a town that's not his.
Carol has no strategy into what she's thinking of doing. It's just... kill, kill, kill. I gotta take out my threats. Never thinking maybe I should wait or do things a different way or come at it from a different angle. That may get her killed.
That's sometimes what's best. Yeah, but I think she's living the right way. You know, sometimes hesitating is something you can't afford to do. If she would have, and I disagree about her never having any plan, because they would have been eaten in Terminus if she didn't have the ability to think ahead. You know, she's that, very, very
smart.
Who's
to know what would have happened if with the wolf had she not had a plan to distract Morgan to run down there and see what was going on?
Pretending to be a soccer mom is also another case of thinking ahead. I think Carol's very smart, and I do agree with her. She's the one character that I would agree with over pretty much anyone at this point, because it seems to work. What she's doing works.
Did she need to force that situation at that time?
Absolutely, because what worse time? You know the old saying, when it rains, it pours? There couldn't be a worse time to have a killer in your basement as when zombies are attacking your town. You know, it was just very bad, and he had no business doing it. And for Carol, it would have been a matter of stabbing him in the neck and then dealing with the horde. So she just wanted to take care of a loose end, and I don't blame her for that. But overall, like I said, I think it was a good episode. This is Talk Brunch, so anybody who thinks that we were going to fuck up and forget about the bonus 2-minute epilogue, that's actually not going to happen, because yes, we have one more bonus scene to cover, the final revelation of this episode, the epilogue or the prologue to the next arc that we're going into. We see Abraham, Sasha, and Darrow, and they're driving down the road. And there are bikers in the middle of the road stopping their truck. And one of the bikers tells them to come out and join them in the road, and that if they resist, that they'll end them. And he asks them to hand over their weapons. And then Darrow says, why should we? And the guy says, because they're not yours. And he says that the truck, the seats, the porn under the seats, the napkins you have, anything that they have no longer belongs to them, and it's theirs. And Sasha asks, who does it belong to then? And then he says, all of your property now belongs to Negan. And then it ends. So Abraham, Sasha, and Darrow are in trouble now.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the cliffhanger that really made this entire thing insane.
Those of you that don't read the books, you have no idea what trouble they're in, but they're in trouble.
Are they just going to have their stuff taken and be left on the side of the road?
Well, I mean, in the books, this doesn't happen, but the whole mention of Negan, it's like, if you don't know who Negan is, you're going to find out.
Yeah. And now that we're done with the episode, spoiler warning for those of you that are just going into this to hear about the episode and don't want to hear about the show comparisons, I would say keep fast forwarding until you hear the theme song of the regular show, and then you know you're safe. But anyway, for the rest of you guys, yeah, a few different changes. As we know, what's going to happen is Jesse's going to get killed out there, and that's why it's important, the whole thing about Carl holding hands with her, because when her kid starts to piss himself, that's what gets the attention of all of the walkers, and they turn and they start ripping him to shreds, in turn ripping her to shreds, and she won't let go of Carl's hand, so Rick has to cut off her own hand still attached to Carl to break Carl free and escape, leaving her behind to be eaten
pretty much.
Yeah, and as far as my theory of Carol being the one that was going to die, I said that if they were going to kill Carol, they were going to make her be the one that was holding Sam's hand. And since she's nowhere near there, I don't think they're going to do it. I just thought it would be an interesting twist, since Carol and Sam seem to have developed a bond.
Right.
But overall, I think they filled everyone for the holiday. You know, I think it was a good place to leave off.
Now, how many people are still left outside the city besides the 5 we know of?
I think that's it.
So everybody else that was part of the original group trying to lead away the herd got killed?
What do you mean, like the people in the town, or just like the main characters?
No, like when the group that went out to lead the herd away, all of them except for 5 and Rick was killed off?
Well, yeah, it's it was the one guy that they made it back and they thought he was going to die, but Denise actually saves him. So he's still in one of the houses recovering for the time being. We're assuming the rest of the people are just off in their houses still hiding.
Oh, so some of them got back to the town along with Rick.
Yeah. Like Rick's whole team didn't die. Some of them made it back.
Yeah, I would assume so. I don't know if they ever mentioned it or not, but I would hope so. I mean, now, Rick was the last one back because he got held up by the wolves.
Right.
Now, as far as days go, how long do you think it's going to take for them to clear this mess up?
I don't know. That's a good question. If it follows the comic books, they just stay out there fighting. Remember in the comic books, which is not going to happen, if they wanted to honor the comic books, Deanna would have went down shooting And as she was going down shooting, one of her shots as she's being eaten would have wildly fired off and it would have hit Carl in the eye. He would have lost his eye, fell to the ground, and then they would have had to protect the area where Denise was operating on him to try to restore his life. So they no longer have the option of trying to leave Alexandria like they originally planned. They now have to stay and fight this horde of walkers because Carl's there and he's incapacitated. So a lot of this can't happen now because Deanna already went down in the house. She's not going to shoot him in the eye. We're still going to get the scene with the walkers. And I don't think that just to correct you, McWrestling, I could be wrong about this, but I don't think that the opening scene to the next season is going to start right there. That wouldn't really make any sense, because why do that when you can kind of tease that a little bit more? I think we'll probably
They already teased us with the whole Glenn thing. Like, you and I, we had it in our heads. We knew, like, Glenn wasn't finished off yet.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll start with Abraham, Sasha, and Daryl, you know, where there's nothing happening.
But right, you saw the clip of what to expect next. So yeah, I guess it would be the follow-up to that. Yeah. And then jump back into what's going on.
Yeah, and even without that clip, the smart thing to do would be to leave that a cliffhanger for as long as possible. So the first episode will be Abraham, Sasha, and Daryl. And then eventually we'll travel back to this entire walking through the walkers with the guts shit, and they'll wrap that up.
Yeah, I guess that works.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, guys. Well, this has been great. Mid-season finale talk here. Really enjoyed it. Good having you on, Surfer. Always like to hear your expertise and your analysis on these situations.
Well, I'm just glad I helped together, because, you know, this kind of stuff scares me to my core, you know? I'm shaking in my boots now, to be honest. So you gentlemen have been a pretty big help to give me courage. I'm not Father. I'm not the preacher, but if I got caught in a zombie apocalypse, yeah, I'm going to go down swinging, so.
Yeah, well said, well said. And listen, guys, for you Talk Bunch listeners out there, you can catch Surfer on the What Are You Reading comic book show every Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m., right?
No, it just ends when it ends.
So it's from 5 to whenever the hell he wants, a lot like we do this show. And it's a call-in show. So go to RantDM, go to the chat, and listen out for the number and call in and participate. He talks about comics. Sometimes we pop up there. It's a great show, man. Don't forget about that. And also, we have our other project that we're working on. A lot of you people, if you're following us on YouTube or if you're following us on Rant EM, you already know the other thing that we're working on, which is the Jessica Jones review, where we're talking everything Jessica Jones, going through all of the different stuff happening and giving our analysis, our comparisons to the comic books, and it's just a really good time, man. We just have a lot of jokes.
My ringtone now, by the way.
Nice, good choice. Oh,
I would love to have that as a ringtone.
It's bad because you see how low it starts up? I can't hear it. So when it starts to kick in, it's like, oh shit, I gotta answer my phone, because that's like the last 3 seconds until the call ends.
Yeah, but guys, don't forget, check on YouTube. It's a YouTube exclusive, but you can also find our rantemradio.com. We have it up there too. If you want the visuals and stuff, go to the YouTube one. Just listen to it, though. It's great conversation. You get us, you get Surfer's co-host Jordan, and we all just shoot the shit, and there'll be more episodes of that, so keep looking, check back, you know, stay in touch. So that's our plug for the other stuff, because now Walking Dead season is over, you know, we won't have that anymore. Something else I was going to bring up before we end the pre-show is that I do like the pre-show, you know, and even though Walking Dead's not coming back to February, I might just keep this around.
Do we have the date as when that's coming back?
Sometime in February. But for the time being, you know, the pre-show is something when we may keep it around as something to talk about whatever we want. And this is where a lot of you listeners are going to come in, because I think you should let us know, tweet us and let us know, what do you want to talk about? What series, what games? If we could just shoot the shit, you know? Come at me, bro.
That is how we started. We used to just talk about what we were doing during the week before we turned it on Walking Dead.
Yeah, this used to be an unofficial pre-show. Like, it was literally us preparing to start, and we would just let it roll. But now we do the Walking Dead. But, you know, give us some tweets, man. Use hashtag brunch at me. Instead of come at me, bro, use hashtag brunch at me. And just mention shit you want to talk about. And we'll use the pre-show for these next couple of months and just talk about different random things. And then if you don't do that, you'll just hear the regular theme song, and there'll be no pre-show.
Aww. Don't do that to us, and don't make us have to go over that Enter the Badlands.
No, we won't do the Enter the Badlands. Now, if anybody, Enter the Badlands request will be ignored.
I'll just say, imagine that's the only thing that comes in.
Yeah. And one last plug before we start the main show. If you haven't listened to it already, very important, great show. It was a huge thing with a lot of big announcements. We had our anniversary episode, which happened last week. It was the live Monday anniversary episode with guest AA. Go back and listen if you didn't listen to it yet. Listen to this too, but listen to that one. It's awesome. We talk about plans for the future. We talk about Carl Winslow. I mean, it gets crazy, man. You wouldn't expect this. Yeah, but don't forget to listen to that episode. In case you're wondering what the hell this music is, that was the theme to that episode. I'm not just plugging random music. I haven't lost my mind yet. But yeah, I recommend it, man. I think McWrestling loved that one too. It's one of your favorites, isn't it?
It definitely is. I'm here bobbing my head to it right now.
It's old school music.
It's the shit, man. And in the positive way, not the way Bret Hart
was. Not the Bret Hart way.
But yeah, seriously, guys, check that episode. Check out the Jessica Jones stuff with Surfer and myself and everyone. And there'll be more content coming. Ah, so that was good. Look how many plugs and stuff we got in there. We plugged everybody. We did good deeds here. All right. Well, Surfer, it was good having you, man.
Oh, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yeah. We will see you throughout the week as always.
Yeah, I'm always around keeping the airways and the cosmic waves safe as a superhero does. So yeah, I'm delusional like that. So
yeah,
it works. Well, we love it.
All right, gentlemen. I will see y'all later. Peace out.
All right, guys, on that note, it's time to start the show.
This is the Talk Brunch Podcast, available at talkbrunch.com. Also on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Talk Brunch, where the heels are all baby faces. And now introducing the two guys who run the whole thing, the tag team champions of the internet, and your hosts, Rick Dara and Nick Russlin.
What's up, fellow marks? It is now after midnight, so it's December 1st, 2015, and this is the 85th episode of Talk Brunch. And tonight we will be talking about wrestling, WWE, Raw, NXT, Dirt Sheets, you name it, we got it. And with me as always is Mick Wrestling, my co-host.
How's it going?
Yeah, what's going on, dude? How you doing?
I'm doing great.
And for the first time, we have Jen here. Who's Jen? You're going to have to keep listening to find out. What's up, Jen?
What's going on, guys?
Same old. Actually surprised that I'm not pissed off today. I expected it to be a bad wrestling day. I didn't expect things to work out too great. And I enjoyed myself, you know? Good week of wrestling.
I was actually shocked you didn't, you know, pop open the whiskey.
Oh, no, I did, but I used eggnog.
Oh, you did.
Yeah, I definitely did. I'm not crazy. So a lot of stuff happened. We'll get into Raw later on, but for now, let's see what's going on in the dirt sheets. What's the word on the streets lately?
Bum, bum, bum.
I guess we can start straight off with the negative. There's the TNA bullshit. Ready to get into some TNA bullshit? Here we go. TNA canceled their upcoming tour of India that was supposed to take place in December. Remember that tour of India that was getting so much
what?
Hype?
Say it ain't so. That whole big announcement that they had and everything.
Yeah, the tour of India. It got canceled. That was supposed to start next week. And talents were told that they would still be getting paid from the tour. And TNA is required to tour India once per year because of their contract with Sony 6. So the tour is going to happen at some point before 2016 ends, we would assume. And the reason the company postponed the tour had to do with logistical issues. And talents for the promotion were scheduled to leave the U.S. this weekend for it. And they were scheduled to have a one night only there. And they were going to tape some other Impact shit there. And there was going to be a whole bunch of other stuff going on. And apparently it's being reported that TNA claimed to several skeptical talents that they canceled because of quote-unquote safety concerns. And there's a rumor going around that the airline tickets were pricier than expected due to the delay in the company purchasing tickets. So as much as they say it's a safety concern, I can't help but visualize Dixie going, good Lord, these airline tickets sure are pricey. Hey, you never know. So last week we addressed MVP's tweet on TNA, where he said the hashtag dollar signs and hashtag whatever the hell this station's called, Pop TV, equals no dollar signs or negative dollar signs. So I kind of feel it's our responsibility to follow up that story, because MVP released an audio defending his comments and how they weren't really intended to be negative. So I'm going to just let you guys hear MVP talk a little bit about this. Because like I said, one thing I like to do on here, even if a story doesn't interest me, I like to follow it up and not just leave it if we find out shit to the contrary. And I wouldn't say
we're not like TNA where we produce storylines and give you no ending.
Yeah, you know, we try to at least have conclusions and shit. So yeah, here we go. I wouldn't say this is contrary to what we said, but this is just him clarifying what he said here.
This particular session is about TNA, their new television deal. My tweet regarding their television deal and my honest position on TNA. First things first, if you are one of the flat scans that interpreted my tweet as something as intentionally negative aimed at TNA, then screw you, because you're an idiot. What my tweet was a professional assessment of a business, of a set of business circumstances, essentially. I worked at TNA, and I have nothing but praise for the locker room of TNA. Some of the finest men and women in our industry bust their asses for TNA, essentially, in the TNA ring. And the people that work behind the camera. The crew, production crew, man, some hard working people. I have friends as well as colleagues that I'm close to that work at TNA. I wish TNA no ill whatsoever. I'm rooting for TNA. So let me be very, very clear. Being critical of the management does not mean that I'm shitting on TNA. I want TNA to succeed. I have never, ever not wanted TNA to succeed, or any other wrestling company for that matter. I am a professional wrestler. It is my craft. It is my skill. It is the way I have made my living. I love the art and craft of professional wrestling. The business of professional wrestling, I've often said, I'm not so fond of. But at no point do I ever root for the demise of any company. And if you're one of those people, and I'm sure some of you watching this have rooted for the demise of TNA, then you're not a fan of professional wrestling. And I understand why. I mean, just being honest, TNA has managed to survive for 13 years. And in that time, it seems that they've made a number of questionable business decisions along the way. So as fans, people are disappointed with decisions that have been made, the direction of the company, and fans have voiced this displeasure to the point that TNA now is what many people call a damaged brand. That's not me shitting on TNA at all. That's me stating a fact. This is what a lot of people call TNA because of the various incarnations that it's been through. Now let me explain this to you. My tweet was Spike equals $3 signs. Destination America equals $1 sign. Pop TV minus dollar sign. This is what that meant. Now, first of all, let me preface this by saying, I am happy that TNA was able to get another television deal. They need a U.S. television presence to survive. That tweet wasn't negative regarding their television deal. It was an assessment. Let me explain why. TNA, when they were with Spike, were given a substantial amount of money for their programming. Millions of dollars. Eight figures. For reasons that we won't discuss here, Spike decided to cancel TNA. TNA signed a deal with Destination America for significantly less money than they had with Spike. They were canceled again off of Destination America. Now, within 1 year, they were canceled off of two different networks despite having good ratings. What leverage do you have to negotiate a strong television deal? You have no leverage. This is just basic business. This isn't hating. This isn't shitting on the company. This is just business. There's no leverage. From what I know about Pop TV, they used to be the TV Guide channel, and they went through some various incarnations to where now they have some original programming. They do quite a few syndicated shows, and now they have TNA Impact, and they're available in a number of homes. A lot more people will have access to Impact now. From a business standpoint, what does that mean to TNA? Well, it means that they still have a U.S. television presence, which gives their international television deals value. I don't know the terms of their deal. I don't know if Pop TV is paying them. There are rumors that TNA is paying Pop TV for airtime. I don't know if that's true either. There have been people saying that they're doing some sort of an ad revenue sharing type thing where I guess Pop TV keeps a certain amount of ad time, TNA gets to sell the rest. If that's the case, they're getting some money in. But it's not a better deal than they had at Destination America, and certainly not a better deal than they had at Spike. So my tweet was just detailing how, unfortunately, they're spiraling downward in from a business standpoint. It's awesome that they are available now in more homes than they were before. I am telling you, watch TNA. Watch it. Support professional wrestling wherever you find it. I don't care what the letters are in front of it. As a matter of fact, I've often said this. I implore you, if you're watching this now and you've never been to an independent wrestling show, please take the time to go on the internet, look up your area, look up the independent wrestling promotions that are within a reasonable drive in your area. I'm willing to bet you there's at least one. Maybe they're not, some of them won't be the best professional wrestling, but you'll see the passion and the pride and you will have a good time. Support pro wrestling. My departure from TNA is something I don't necessarily need to go into, but let's just say that there was a disagreement with decisions made by management that led to my departure. And that's all I'll say about that. I am critical of decision-making by management in TNA, but at no time have I been critical of the talent who bust their ass to put on a tremendous wrestling show, or the crew, the production crew that carry the cameras and do all the unsung heroes behind the scenes. Again, TNA has been able to hang on. Every time you say, hey man, these people are dead, it's over, the ship is sunk, they managed to snatch another lifeline. And this is a good thing for TNA. And it's a good thing for the people who work there. And it's good for professional wrestling. TNA's future? I don't know. I don't think anyone knows. I don't think they know. But I know that I hope that somehow they're able to turn things around and become a viable company in this, you know, the alphabet soup that is professional wrestling today, because it's not good when you have just one juggernaut that is the only place where you can really make a living. You need multiple places. It's not enough to have ROH. It's not enough to have New Japan. It's not enough to have AAA. You know, you need more places for professional wrestling for the boys and women to make a living, and it's just better for fans in general.
So what are your thoughts on him?
I think he's full of shit and he's backpedaling on his original comments.
I was thinking that too, and it kind of put me to sleep. So
And it's bad because, like I said, I've met MVP before and he seems like he's a really cool guy. We used to talk on Twitter, but I feel like he must have got a lot of backlash from his comments and he's like, ah, shit, like I'm probably going to lose fans or whatever his reasoning is. But I feel like he's fully 100% backpedaling on his original comment.
Or got heat with the boys or something. But anyway, guys, you can find more of his stuff on YouTube. Just look up MVP Session. I believe the YouTube channel I found this on was called Rich Space H, Rich H. So you can go check that out. Pop TV president Brad Schwartz spoke to the Miami Herald about how their relationship with TNA came to be. And in his statement here, he says, Dixie and the Impact team were looking for a new home for their series. They had huge success on Spike, millions of viewers watching every week, and they really enjoyed that success. In switching to another network, Destination America, which didn't have the distribution that Spike had, they obviously noticed a little bit of a hit to the success that they had. So TNA was actively looking for a new television partner. And I think I made the rounds and met with a lot of cable networks to see where a home might be. Where we were on a list of calls and they came in about a couple of months ago and we had our entire team meet with them and listen to the pitch and listen to what they wanted to do, where they saw the company going, where they saw pro wrestling going, and that's how this came to our attention. So it sounds
like
you're
reading this and you sound like you don't even buy this bullshit.
But I'm gonna, you see, I do though. Like, it's a boring thing to read, but I'm buying, this guy sounds like he's behind them. The Destination America people never said anything. They never gave a shit about what was happening with this company.
That is true.
So for the first time, we're seeing like what would happen with a company that actually is invested in this. Like, maybe this is good for them. And it does have a lot of exposure to it. There are a lot of places to get it.
I don't know. Only time will tell. I mean, like, they just gotta, like you said, we give TNA a hard time, but they definitely need to improve their product, and not with their wrestling, just their storylines, because that's what stopped me from watching it. The storylines were just too ridiculous.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. It became painful.
And we could get into it with WWE too, because we said we don't pick sides on this. WWE tonight is the perfect example. They've been putting out some bullshit also, but TNA was just like a whole nother tier of bullshit that I couldn't deal with anymore. And this is coming again from somebody that was watching the product from back in early 2000, like 2004.
So as a result of this new TV deal and everything going on, TNA is looking to acquire talent with name value. And one of their first targets is Leva Bates, aka Blue Pants. And if you recall, she had heat due to her attitude and an incident over SummerSlam weekend in Brooklyn involving public intoxication. But anyway, it's being reported that working for TNA would kill any chance that she has of returning to NXT. So instead,
I don't think she'd be that stupid to make
I don't think she would be that stupid.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing is that the rumors I'm hearing is that she waited, hoping that the heat would die down, and that when WWE found out that TNA had an interest in signing her, they called her back to return. And apparently return she did, because she was at last week's NXT tapings at Full Sail.
Mm-hmm.
So the odds are they won't sign her, but they'll keep her around as a means to keep her out of TNA, I guess.
It's better off for her to do the random indie dates with other companies and then come back to NXT whenever it is that they need her than going on a full-time basis with TNA.
Yeah, something like that would definitely work. Okay, what else do we have going on? Let's get into some listener things. I know the listener comments have been coming in and we've been ignoring those somewhat. So I'm going to blow through some of these. And feel free to chime in if any of you guys have a response.
First listener,
no Spanish, gotcha. So first listener comment is from WWE Fan UK. And he says, congrats on the 1 year, guys. New Day will be out ringing a bell, shouting shame before we know it. Hashtag magical podcast, hashtag I made it. And wow. Anyone who doesn't get those jokes, you are not as long a time listener as WWE Fan UK, because that is an old school one right there. Hashtag magical podcast. That is crazy. Yeah, he's been here since the beginning, it seems like.
Yeah.
This is a long time guy here. Also, someone who I've been forgetting for a couple of weeks, a really good comment that we have on the Facebook page. We have pre-GH. I don't really know how to pronounce it, but pre-GH. And they're talking about TNA, and they said, like, the best girlfriend that keeps telling you her new boyfriend is the one. Good luck, TNA. And that's harsh.
Ouch. And they say we're bad on TNA, right?
Yeah, that made me smile. I mentioned to this person that I was going to shout them out here. And then the other thing was, just heard that Cesaro is out with a torn rotator cuff. That actually, I want to give you credit for that, because you broke that before it was on the dirt sheets. Don't know what your source was, but I was actually listening to another podcast when that rolled in, and it was like, oh, wow. Oh, actually, what it was I was watching Survivor Series, early in Survivor Series. So cool. Thank you for that. And keep the stuff going. And also her last thing, or his last thing, I'm not sure if it's male or female, but last thing is, holla holla player, I made it. Because as you guys know, when we have a long episode, we tell you to hashtag I made it in certain episodes if you made it.
I'm impressed by awesome. The Theodore Long little shout out right there also.
Yeah, I'm impressed by everything. I'm a fan too. So yeah. Jose Ragoza, he said, what's up, fellow Marks? A little late, but hashtag I made it. So yeah, you made it through that whole 3.5 hour frenzy from last week. Awesome. Also, the YouTube has blown up a bit. If you guys haven't gone and looked, go check out our second serving. It's exclusively on YouTube. It's just about the Ronda Rousey stuff that's going on. And I noticed there's so many comments there. I wasn't going to address everyone, so I'm going to just read some of them off here. And I'll address the ones that I think are worthy of something or have something to give. But we have Popsy Boy. And he said, watch her interview with Jimmy Fallon. She predicted how Holly would beat her. It was on point. And I do agree, if you listen to that interview, she sounded like she sort of foreshadowed her own ass whipping there.
We did mention that, though, didn't we?
You know, I've talked about it so much that I don't know what we mentioned and what we don't anymore.
I feel like we mentioned it in the pre-show. Or again, like, we talk so much, it might have been something we mentioned in private. We might have mentioned it on the episode after the pre-show.
Yeah, I could have been on a different podcast. It's not Talk Brunch. It's like, it's all a scramble right, to me at this point, guys. It's all a blur. But yeah, it could have been mentioned. And yeah, Keith Wilson agreed with him and said that that was an eerie foretelling. And then Sparks Drinker said, Holly put her foot in Ronda's neck. And yeah, I guess that's true. Can't argue with him there.
Knockout's a knockout, man.
D. Lima said, LOL, people do watch boxing just like I saw Ronda get counterpunched. So many people taking satisfaction in this Ronda losing thing. Like, I'm indifferent since I was a fan to both people, but I've never seen people show such hatred. Everyone's like, ha-ha, you got punched, bitch. It's like, geez.
What did you think was going to happen? She's in the UFC.
But what's funny is that Ronda spent her entire career being a heel. And
only because all the guys in the kitchen love to talk about her. And just seeing her get knocked off her pedestal a little bit made me laugh. Mm. That's all I'll say.
Well, the ironic thing to me is that Ronda is a heel. She's been a heel her entire career up until she fought Betch Carrera, and then everyone became Ronda Marks, and everyone started popping for her, and she wasn't getting booze at the weigh-ins anymore. And then she loses
this
match,
and
immediately...
What I like to call Goku versus Frieza.
Yeah, and then she loses here, and then immediately everyone turned on her again. It's just crazy. It says a lot about fans, man. People turn on you quickly. But I'm sure she has tough skin. She would think as little of a shit about it as I do if someone did that to us. Like, whatever.
Shit, I don't give a crap, so.
Yeah, exactly. No fucks.
Fuck them.
I imagine Ronda has tough skin, too. Fuck anyone who's even thinking about us that way. See how tough our skin is? Anyway.
Next, you know what? Before we even move on, it wouldn't surprise me if when she comes back for her title, she takes Holly Holmes out in, like, the first round.
Yeah. And speaking of the whole tough skin thing, we have Bon Jovi here who said, these two Einsteins can't figure out why Holly put her fist in her face at the weigh-in. Holly is a lefty. Draw them a map. All real fighters, trainers, experts call this fight explicitly. Even I, for some reason, I who doesn't watch any of it anymore, I can remember myself saying, uh-oh, Ronda Rousey is going to get it now. Wish I put my money where my mouth was, but I didn't follow. Didn't even know they had fought. Fell victim to her own fake hype. What a whipping. And anyway, I wouldn't call myself Einstein, but since we're wondering, I think there were actually three of us on that video that he's commenting on. So, you know, Einstein can count. Just saying. So Kelvin Stokes said that they could fight 10 more times and Holly would KO her 10 more times. So yeah, everyone's getting their aggression out on our common thread. Go ahead.
I mean, I'm not going to disagree with you. Like, Ronda may go back and face her and may get knocked out again. She may go and take her out in the first round. Only time will tell.
So then we have 50YY, and he said, anyone who has been in the game of fighting, myself included, knew very well that Ronda has never had a good stand-up game, and that she was a one-trick pony, armbar the light, and that it was just a question of time for her to meet the hardcore skilled striker who would also know how to defend against her throws and takedowns and armbar and would outstrike Ronda. Ronda could very well box with the average strikers or good enough strikers, but who did not know how to counter her judo takedown moves and armbar submission? If she only had a few different submission tricks like her knee bar, Kimura, triangle choke, guillotine, etc., she could have switched to only takedown and tried to use any of these submission techniques against Holly, since Holly came very well prepared to defend against the armbar. Ronda has no stand-up background in any discipline whatsoever, thus she could not counter in any way Holly's superiority, the latter being a seasoned boxer and kickboxer. When did you ever see Ronda throw any decent kicks, let alone combos that included kicks, punches, and elbows? Never. Her striking compared to the skilled kickboxers was average at best. For me, it was no surprise at all, and even least a shock, that she got rocked the way she did and subsequently KO'd. Judo was the key that took her up to this point, but only one discipline expertise in the MMA world can only take you so far until the better, more rounded fighter comes along. In the past 2 years, I have always had discussions with many Ronda fans, telling them, actually asserting that the first time she will lose against a good striker, it will be by knockout. The reason being is that she has no familiarity with taking extreme punishment with blows to her face and head. She never ever had a serious beating the way she experienced with Holly. That got her to panic and lose her focus. As far as judo, she was a pro and real amazing athlete at it. But as far as striking, she was an amateur, and she fought exactly like an amateur after she'd been rocked by Holly. A true champion who knows to keep their cool, even if they get hit multiple times, changes direction, and tries different approaches to the fight. In her case, since judo is her forte, she should have stopped chasing after Holly, should have kept her guard sealed, and she should have switched her strategy exclusively to takedown and submission, period. I'm going to give him the... You got to give the slow clap on somebody.
Clap or not? Because he pretty much just went into more detail about what we said.
It's the slow clap because anyone who can type that much needs to have the slow clap. He felt compelled to type that much. I felt compelled to read. If you're going to put that much effort into a comment for our show, then I'm going to read that. And thank you.
Okay. Because I thought it was. Don't be a douche to him. But
No.
He's definitely right, though. He went into detail and said everything that I pretty much and you pretty much said. We gave the short answer to Ronda is not a striker. She's a judo fighter. She does her takedowns, and her mistake going into the fight. We're getting into this again, even though we said we weren't going to get into it, was she tried to box with Holly Holmes, and she's not a boxer. And when she realized that she couldn't beat her at her own game, like she did with Bitch, it was at that point, it was too late, and she got frustrated and she got dropped.
Yep. She sure did. All right, and now we have Jean Dumas, who said she usually wins the stare down, but with this home, she got not win a single one, and she knew it. Fear is something you can see in another person's eye. I wish I could describe it better, but I can't. No worries, Jean. I could tell English isn't your first language, but thanks for still trying anyway. But I'm still being literal here. You can really see it when a person's eyes, when they are scared. Look at the previous stare down with Holly. I think there are two others. Holly is ice cold. Ronda is always the first one to disengage. I think it comes down to the fact that Holly has done it more often than Ronda and is better at it than her. Ronda came out aggressive to try to get her to get in her face and intimidate her in order to win and at least one stare down, and it did not work. Yeah, so look, people are psychoanalyzing the shit out of this fight, man.
That's a very good analysis, because that's definitely not what I was paying attention to at all when it came down to this fight.
Yeah, and then we have Dumoni, and he said other fighters won't be afraid of Ronda anymore. That aura of invincibility is gone. Other fighters will see her weakness and gain confidence and want to fight Ronda now. The fear factor is gone. That's pretty harsh. I mean, it's true, though. I mean, she is more of a human now.
She's more humanized, but at that same point, that it also opens up the room for them to make the mistake and think that, oh, I know her weakness, and then they'll go for it and fail horribly.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility.
Like, you don't know, going into the next game with the next fight with her, she may completely change her game plan. And what you when she thinks she's going to go for that judo takedown, who knows? She may come out with some strikes.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to see something, but I don't have confidence. As much as I'm a Ronda fan, like, the Holly ass beating is still fresh in my mind. I watched it a couple more times, and I'm still surprised at how bad it was.
I don't know. I feel like she'll come back in, surprise everybody, and win her title back on the first attempt in the first round. I'm calling it right now.
Yeah, that'll definitely be interesting if something like that happens. Then we'll have a feud, a good old rivalry. Rivalries are always good for sports, so this will be a fantastic thing to have.
Mm-hmm.
And we still have that legacy. It's like Ronda left behind a great legacy as an undefeated champion before this happened.
Yeah, she's like the female Undertaker of her division.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, that's it, because the rest of the listener comments, well, the last one I have here is Spanish, and unless Double A is going to pop up, we're just going to leave that there. I'm sure Double A is in bed right now.
Imagine you bring him in just to answer the one thing, and you'll be like, all right, thanks, man.
Yeah, bring him in as a run-in? Hell yeah, man. I'm not going to lie, I was already trying, but he's not responding.
This is Marvel versus Capcom, or you could call in a support character.
Imagine that, like just a run-in for Spanish. That'd be dope, man.
Want to chat with the guys? Then be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to us on YouTube. TalkBrunch.com. Served hot.
All right, so anyway, what else do we have going on the tree of news here? You know what, let's talk a little MMA news since we have so many people that are discussing the MMA before we get to, like, the Raw and everything else. The UFC CEO, Lorenzo Fertitta, he recently confirmed that UFC 193, the Holly Holm one, obviously, it did more than 1 million buys on pay-per-view. And as it stands now, it's already the third largest pay-per-view show in the company's history. And it could turn out to be the second biggest. So, you know, they're doing this thing really did explode. They're definitely going to pursue a rematch for this. And Fertitta even said that if Ronda were to accept an immediate rematch, that he expects that the second fight would beat UFC 100, which is still the most lucrative event in history of UFC. And, like, in addition to the pay-per-view success, the all-time record-breaking attendance in the stadium that they were in Melbourne, it was one of the most successful shows that has ever sold to bars, restaurants in North America, as they sold the show to 6,000 establishments, the most in UFC history outside the Brock Lesnar versus Cain Velasquez fight in 2010. And it was also the most bet on fight in UFC history by a wide margin. And
that's pretty insane, since, like, I went into watching the fight thinking that it was going to be a typical Ronda bout until, like, where I said in the previous episodes, until the minute where she actually got into the octagon, and I was like, something's off. But prior to that, I expected it to go as any other fight in the past.
And in other news, we have Cyborg, who will be going one-on-one against Cindy Dandois, which is a teammate of UFC champion bantamweight contender and former Strikeforce women's champion Misha Tate. So that's going to be a fight going on. And Misha Tate has called out Holly Holm for a fight. She basically told Fox Sports, she said, here's why I think the fight with Holly and I makes sense. And I had to come back and read it later because I was laughing so hard after the first sentence, man.
It was like, well, you couldn't beat Ronda's, but you think the person that could beat Ronda, like, you have a chance at beating them. Good luck.
She said, for one, I haven't ever fought Holly before. For two, I was Ronda's biggest challenge until Holly. So obviously, I've proven that I'm a standout in the division. And so is Holly. If Holly would beat me, then they could still set up the great rematch that they want between her and Ronda. If I beat Holly, then I'm 5-0, and I beat the girl who beat Ronda. What better case could they ever make to have me fight Ronda again? I think that fight sells itself. And
I kind of get where she's coming from. She wants her rematch at the title like she was supposed to get, so I guess I could say I commend her for trying to throw that out there.
Yeah, but don't be about that life.
Yeah, Holly Holm, don't do that. Like,
Holly Holm's dangerous. Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see what's going to happen. But yeah, Misha has her concerns about the situation and everything. And Bruce Buffer spoke about it, and he said, actually, you know what? I have the audio here as well as the transcript. Let me let you hear this Bruce Buffer audio on Ronda.
Do you think she got complacent a bit?
No. Ronda fought three times this year, if I'm not mistaken. Made two movies, if I'm not mistaken. Booked for two more. Did more publicity in the last 4 or 5 months since her book was released, which is still number one on the charts,
yeah,
than most major movie stars releasing motion pictures.
Yeah.
This girl didn't have a full plate. This girl had a full table.
And you think that must have affected her, you know,
I think it would affect anybody because you're not focusing on the job at hand as much as you would if that's all you had to focus on. But she, again, is an amazing talent. So I don't question her. I support her. And I think she's going to come back like an incredible beast.
So if she removed some of those distractions, she would stand a better chance in round two.
I'm sure that if Ronda could take time off, go to the gym, train for 3 months to prepare for a fight with Holly Holm with absolutely no distractions, I don't even want to imagine the Ronda Rousey we're going to see come out. Because again, we're talking top of the food chain, Olympic, amazing athlete.
Yeah, so he could be right in the sense that she was overwhelmed with the signings and this, that, and WrestleMania appearances.
I totally agree with him. And this is what I'm saying, where when she comes back, it would not surprise me if she's able to take out Holly Holmes in the first round. It's not me being like a Ronda fanboy. It's just me calling it the way that I see it.
All right. We'll see. I mean, keep in mind, Holly Holm has like about 33 fights under her belt, I believe.
I get that.
And I think they were all title defenses or something. Don't quote me, but the girl's stats are really crazy as just an overall fighter. This is not a regular opponent by any means. She's used to this kind of pressured condition, and it will be one hell of a fight. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it'll probably be Ronda's hardest fight ever.
I don't know. It's like, for once, you always say you like to root for the underdog every now and again. And right now it seems like Ronda is the underdog. And for once, I'm the one rooting for the underdog. Like, I feel like she could pull it off in a rematch.
We could see. And we're going to have one more audio here regarding this whole thing. This is, Ronda was on Larry King recently. I don't have the whole thing here. So I say, guys, look up the Larry King YouTube channel where I believe he has the whole thing. But this is just a few snippets, and it's still kind of lengthy, so bear with me. But there's some good stuff in here. I just wanted you guys to hear this post-fight Larry King, Holly Holm.
Before signing with the UFC, Holly was a professional boxer and kickboxer. And during her boxing career, she defended her title 18 times in 3 different weight divisions for a record of 33-2. Who'd you lose to?
And Sophie Matisse. I don't know exactly how last name, but and Rita Tracy from real early on in my career.
You never forget those.
Never.
How'd you celebrate?
You know, I went, hung out at the venue for a bit. Had to do some, you know, stuff after the fight, and then went out to the hotel, showered, and went and had a beer and French fries at a pub with my family.
Were you confident before the fight?
Yes, I always go in with every intention of winning, and so you have to be confident in yourself, with always knowing that anything can happen, and you know, being aware of their strengths when you get in there. Ronda's been a very dominant champion for a reason. She's worked very hard, and she's very, very talented, so I knew that I had my hands full, but I knew that it was possible.
But this has been the most pressure-packed UFC fight ever, right? Melbourne, Australia, both undefeated. Were you at all uptight at all?
During training camp, I can't tell you how many times I cried just from wanting to do everything perfect. And some days training wasn't awesome. Other days it was great. Days I would feel, you know, unstoppable. I would also even cry on those days because I could just sense victory. But as soon as the fight actually came, I had put all my hard work into training, and I actually was a little more at ease than normal, not than normal, just more than I thought I would be for this big of a fight. So yeah, my nerves were high, but older man told me one time, you know, I'm sure you're probably nervous, but at least all the butterflies in your tummy will be in formation by the time the fight comes.
You had a scuffle at the weigh-in?
Yeah, we had a pretty intense stare down.
Was this to help the?
Oh, it was not planned. It just kind of, you know, she got off the scale and was had a lot of energy coming over, came to do a face-off, and so it got a little intense for a minute.
Her injuries were pretty rough. She can't fight for 60 days.
Yeah. I mean, there's injuries I've had even when I've walked out with a victory, so, but I hope she heals quickly.
Time magazine has now labeled her a new kind of hero because she lost. So she says now she has the chance to be a whole new kind of hero, no longer unstoppable, alien force, becomes something far more important, a human champion, one with vulnerabilities.
you know, it's what you do in those moments. And those are the moments you dig deep and really, you know, work to come back hard. And so, yes, I think a lot of people really admire when somebody can come from being, you know, knocked down and coming back and coming back strong. So I'm sure she's going to come back strong.
Was she a bad sport? You can tell me.
You know, I think that she's done great for the sport because she's so passionate about what she does and carries this confidence about her. So, I really don't, everybody has their own ways of dealing with their emotion for the sport. And so I'm not going to judge it.
So you don't personally dislike her?
No.
Have you talked to her since the fight?
Not since the fight, you know, just right immediately after the fight before we left the octagon. I just said, you know, I really admire you for being such a great dominant champion, and a lot of us wouldn't be here without you, so I appreciate you.
John Jones is a mixed martial artist. He said, you're the best female athlete in combat fighting.
That's a lot coming from him because he's such a great fighter. I mean, he's one of a kind. He's been able to be a very dominant champion, and so it's very flattering to hear that coming from him. You know, I wouldn't be able to even be as far as we've gotten without the help of my team and with him. So I'll just keep trying to keep making people proud.
Did you have an edge? And because this was said by some boxing experts, in fact, Floyd Mayweather might have said it too. A boxer, having been a boxer, straight boxing, gave you an edge because in the stand-up part, you were more skilled than her. Your punch is more lethal than hers. You were trained as a boxer. She wasn't. She was judo. Mm-hmm. You were about, do you think that was part of the edge that people didn't see before the fight?
There's an edge with that, but on her end, if she can just get past a punch, her edge is having that clinch and being able to do judo throws and all that. So every fighter presents their own strengths. So I don't feel like I had the edge. I just feel like I was able to control what I wanted to in the fight and not let her capitalize on her strengths.
Did she hurt you?
She landed a couple punches that I thought, well, let's not make a habit of that, you know?
But she got you down and you got up. You got out of it and up.
She attempted for an armbar and I was not too threatened and got right up. And that's good for me for the fight, but also for my career as a whole. Any moment like that that you can actually, you know, you do it 1,000 times in practice, but until you do it live in a fight, is the only time that it really matters. So,
what was the winning blow?
You know, I knew I had her days with a couple of my straight lefts, and she, you know, kind of went to the ground and got back up, and that's when I knew that I needed to capitalize and finish, and so I went for a head kick that dropped her and then just went in to finish with some punches until the ref called it.
There's a WWE wrestler, Taz, you know him? He said that the fight was preset because he thought like a wrestler, you know, that they preset so he set it up for the next one.
No. No MMA fighting, and especially with the UFC, is ever going to be set up. These fighters go in, and there's a reason why, you know, Dana puts out those knockout bonuses and those performance of the night bonuses, because he wants people to be motivated to go in there and perform well.
Why? You're so beautiful.
You're sweet.
You hear that, Taz? You hear that, Taz?
Why do you do this?
It's a passion.
I'm mad he even got mentioned in this.
It's the scariest feeling getting in there. Not because you think you're going to get hurt, because you just don't want to lose. But it is the most rewarding feeling when you win, and that's what you're chasing, is the victory.
You transitioned to MMA after boxing and kickboxing, right?
Yes, I feel like I've made a great transition to MMA.
Why did you transition?
Oh, why? My whole boxing career has been out of the same gym, so I have a ton of, you know, MMA teammates. That's what I did my whole boxing career around, and I just started getting really interested in it, and I tried it, and I just thought, you know, I've always told myself passion first. Everything else falls into place, and I really wanted to follow through with just trying it out.
Was it a difficult transition?
No, I think anything you love enough and are passionate about is something you're going to make happen. It was a lot of hard work, but definitely something I was into.
What was your first UFC fight like?
I was coming off of 2 really big injuries. I had never had a big injury from fighting ever. I had a broken arm from a previous fight I'd been in, and I had a herniated disc from practice in my neck, so I had to postpone my first UFC fight, and it was all this anticipation of me coming to the UFC. So there was a lot going into that first fight, and I just couldn't wait to get it over with, and glad it's behind.
When you fight, will there be a rematch?
I believe there will be. We'll see what happens. I just do whatever opportunities open up for me.
Dana White says there will be.
Yeah, I think that's great.
Will you fight before that?
I would love to.
You make a lot of money off this.
This was the biggest pay I've ever had for a fight, absolutely.
You deserve that.
Thank you.
Now that you're in the spotlight, are you ready to handle it?
You know, I always like my privacy in my life, but I don't want to not be successful, and with success comes more lights, more cameras.
You want to have family?
I do.
You have children?
I don't have any yet, but I want to.
I mean,
to.
You want?
Yes, when I'm done fighting, though.
Yeah, don't be a mother. No. Take a little baby into the fight.
Maybe if weird. I was 24, but I'm 34. I'll take time off for that.
Was Ronda Rousey your toughest opponent?
Every opponent I feel is my toughest opponent.
Was there someone who gave you a rougher night?
In the fight, yes. I think I'm going to have to go with Anne Sophie. She, you know, Anne Sophie Matisse, she was a French champion. We had our fight. She's one of my losses in boxing. She dropped me in the sixth, knocked me out in the seventh, and
that wasn't
brutal
UFC,
knockout.
Right?
No. This was my toughest
UFC fight.
Yes.
But she was tougher that was a bad night for you.
Right. I would have to say that was probably the most, that's the most I've ever been dominated.
What feelings do you have regarding all of the trash talking people have done towards Ronda Rousey since your win?
I know when you're on top, people are going to say what they want, but I feel like she's done so much for the sport, and she's a human being. She's got a life, she's got a family, she's got feelings, and you know, I don't like when they get too brutal about stuff. I know she's tough enough, she can probably handle it, but some of them are a little over the top.
In a rematch, do you think she would do something different?
I think she'll come back with a different plan. Every fight's different. I don't ever expect anything to be exactly the same, so I would just have to train twice as hard.
You know, having listened to that, I kind of agree with you, McWrestling. I could see why you feel like Taz sort of fucking tainted it, because it sort of felt refreshing to hear from the champ and to hear just for her to take us back to these moments and shit.
And she's very humble about it, too.
Yeah, she's very humble. She's very informative. We really get like a psychology thing about what's happening there and, like, you know, what she's been through. And then, like, in the middle of us getting this fucking great thing. You gotta love Botchamania. And there's a bonus little short audio here I have for you guys that you're gonna love, because this is something that a lot of people have been talking about, and we heard about this long before Holly Holm came along. But here's Chris Cyborg's take on the whole thing.
How about you fighting Holly Holmes? Could that happen?
No, I can fight Holly Holm. You know, she's good challenger for me. She's like boxing from boxing. I think good match. And I don't think she ducked me because punch. I think she's accepted this fight.
Leila Ali said that Ronda Rousey's overrated. What do you...
You know, I respect Leila Ali and respect her family. You guys know boxing. And, you know, I knew Ronda cannot take punch because this she's ducked me.
No wonder they call her the cyborg, right? That bitch sounds like the Terminator.
Yo, she sounds like she pours out a bowl of milk and fucking steroids for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day.
Yo, on Joe Rogan's podcast, I don't remember the exact quote, but he somehow implied at the end of a statement he made that she has a dick. Like, he said something about worrying about her penis. And apparently he has
heat
with her now.
And it's probably bigger than his. And you know what? Like, come on.
I don't remember what it was. I was half asleep listening to the Joe Rogan podcast, which, by the way, I highly recommend. It's an awesome podcast. Especially, I listened to the one literally of them. They did a podcast on the plane after the Ronda Rousey fight, on the plane on the way out. Literally right at the aftermath, almost like we did the second serving. So they're still sort of in shock about it, but it was awesome. But yeah, somewhere in there, I just remember he casually mentioned Chris Cyborg's penis. And she caught wind of that podcast, and now there's heat. I just thought it was funny. I was going to find the audio, but I just thought, nah, maybe next week, because I knew we were going to spend a lot of time on MMA this week. And yeah, for those of you listeners that are bitching about the amount of time we spent on MMA, hey, listen, man, at the end of the day, the people that like MMA took the time to engage us and write paragraphs and paragraphs of different statements and comments and stuff. You want to hear about other shit? Message us about wrestling. You know, I engage you about whatever, but there's a lot of you guys, you clearly wanted to talk about the Ronda Rousey stuff some more. Now, who am I to deprive you of that? I mean, hell, I watched the fight again. I kind of get it.
It was
but
intense.
That's it. That's it for now. You know, moving along to wrestling news, which is also still a lot of fun. We have a few other things, something that hasn't happened in a long time, but it's going to happen right now, man.
I was about to say I'm afraid.
Yep, it's one of those episodes. Wesley Blake from the tag team Blake and Murphy, arrested for DUI this summer, refused to take the sobriety test. Big, big problems. It was on before 4th of July in the summer. And he was arrested on July 3rd around 3 a.m. His license was promptly suspended, according to court documents obtained by Pro Wrestling Sheet. There's a video where officers remind Blake, real name Corey Weston, that his license will be suspended for a year if he doesn't agree to a blood, urine, or breath test. The 28-year-old doesn't budge, however. Court records show Blake initially entered a plea of not guilty, but eventually waived his right to a speedy trial, and the case was put into a pre-trial diversion program, which means he avoided sentencing by entering into a program with some requirements. It's unclear what those exact requirements were, but the Florida State Attorney's Office says it usually means the defendant has to participate in community service in a series of classes. If completed successfully, the charge will be dropped. No word on whether WWE had any knowledge of the arrest. However, Blake and Murphy dropped the tag team titles to the Vaudevillains a few weeks after the lockup. That must
burn. I feel like that was inevitable. That had nothing to do with the case.
Bad news for him, though.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I'm pretty sure they're going to punish him as a tag team later on down the road for that.
You think so?
It's possible. I mean, we've seen Kofi get a shitty deal because of stuff that Evan Bourne did, so I could see it happening.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. Oh, boy. Got to stay out of trouble out there, guys. They're watching you. And
Big brother.
Big brother and Big Vince, Big Vinny.
Yeah, Big Vinny Mac.
Yeah, and not only that, but you're going to get to hear the arrest tape of Blake. I know you were dying for that.
I wasn't, but roll it.
Corey James Weston.
And I request that you submit to an approved test of your breath for the purpose of determining the alcoholic content of your breath. If you refuse to take this test, your driving privilege would be suspended for a period of 1 year for your first refusal, or 18 months if your driving privilege has been previously suspended for refusal to submit to a local test.
Okay.
Additionally, if you refuse to take this test and your driving privilege has been previously suspended for a prior refusal, you would be committing a misdemeanor.
Right.
Your refusal to submit to the test is admissible into evidence in any criminal proceeding. Will you take this test?
No.
Okay. All right. So you still refuse to submit to the test knowing that your driver's privilege will be suspended for a period of 1 year?
Yep.
That motherfucker was not budging on that test. I wonder what he was on that he didn't want to come up on the test. He's like, I'd rather take the penalty.
Yeah, you know, he had to be on coke or some type of wild shit that he figured, like, whatever he tested positive for, it would have ended his WWE career.
When he refused, I like that awkward pause that was there. Where it was like, he just went, no. And then it was just like, no one knew what to say. They were like, oh, shit.
We thought he was going to just take it, but okay.
Yeah. That's rough news, man. Rough news. Let's try to lighten things a little bit. Ziggler and Dana Brooke are an item.
I saw that. Well, I saw pictures. That. Yeah.
Wow.
I feel like he could do better, but to each his own.
They spent Thanksgiving together, and she tweeted and said, Happy Thanksgiving from Ziggler and I. Our dinner is complete. And thanks to Walmart for providing us in-season carrots.
I don't know why I thought you were going to say Patti LaBelle pies.
Oh, not that again. Why is that coming up on different shows? Come on. I can't you carry that shit over from Freaks and Geeks over here, man. Oh, man. Yeah, that was an experience. Not to segue too far off, but yeah, we went on Freaks and Effing Geeks and we had a little fun on there. We did some prank calls and that Patti LaBelle shit came up. I was still laughing about that. I had a good time, though. That was awesome.
Yeah, you guys caught me off guard. But like I told them, I'll be back. I'm bringing my A game for the prank call.
Yeah, next time, let's just think it out a little bit. I think we could do like a duel type thing that would be really funny. We'll come up with something. But yeah, that's a fun show, man. Check it out. You guys know how to see all the other shows on here. Look at that. Free plugs just for talking. But yeah, so Ziggler, Dana, that's what we were talking about. Yeah, that was all I had for that story. There's no climatic anything there. They're just dating. So,
good for them.
According to Conan, that Zeb Del Rio storyline that we're hearing is Vince's idea. And Conan is a credible source to say
that. Any surprise there, honestly?
Yeah, big shock.
Yeah, no shock at all. But yeah, Conan's a credible source because, you know, he talks to Del Rio. So thank you, Vince, for that shitty storyline that I still don't understand.
Yeah, Conan.
Old man comes out of the scooter with Del Rio and the two of them fist bump. That to me is the weirdest instance. It's weird because it doesn't have pyro. There's nothing really too strange about it. It's very subtle, but when you look, it's there and it's the weirdest thing on the entire 3 hours. It's just the old man coming out on the scooter, Del Rio coming out with that music, and then the two of them fist bump and then go up the ramp. It's like, why? That's like completely out of place.
Did you see his hate free zone sign?
Yeah,
he just keeps on running his little scooter.
Yeah, this thing is going in. That's when you know that people are offended by an angle, when it's so bad that the dirt sheets decide to just call out whoever is responsible. Because how often do you hear, you know who wrote this? Only when it's that bad. In other news, the WWE Network has some new shows going on. Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels have been announced for an upcoming episode of the Stone Cold podcast. And there's episodes, these are pre-recorded episodes, so they won't be airing live on the network after Raw like the other ones did. But they're going to be doing two new shows. One's called Ride Along, where they film conversations with wrestlers that are traveling on the road. And an Edge and Christian show that totally reeks of awesomeness. Whatever the hell that means. Your thoughts on these shows? Yeah, exactly. I guess we have to stay tuned. That's the hook right there.
Catch you like that Walking Dead season finale.
Yeah, exactly. So now we're going down injury road. Injury and firing road. There's a lot of stuff to talk about here. Sami Zayn is going to be returning from injury. He's supposed to be in the UK NXT tour. And he's already back at the Performance Center training for his return.
Finally.
Yeah, so finally we get some El Generico. Hell yeah. Cesaro, he had his surgery on November 23rd to repair his fully torn left rotator cuff, and he's expected to be out for between 4 to 6 months. He recently mentioned that he actually hurt his shoulder a couple of months ago, but he ignored it. But he was still hurt, and he continued to lift weights with it hurt, and he might have worsened the injury by doing so.
I see his logic. He probably thought he could have powered through it.
Yeah,
the old no pain, no gain logic.
Yeah, but then he found out about the tear prior to Survivor Series, so he was pulled from the show. But he was originally going to be in that 10-man tag team pre-show thing. So now we're going to not have Cesaro for 6 months on top of all the other things that have gone wrong.
That sucks.
Randy Orton, his injury is worse than expected. It was supposed to be...
I heard he was putting up the Christmas tree this time and he extended the injury.
Come on. Jesus Christ. Holy shit. I guess that's the soundbite of the day. But anyway, his injury is worse than expected. He was supposed to be sidelined until after WrestleMania 32 because of a shoulder injury. But it's reported that after the shoulder injury is done, he's going to have neck surgery as soon as he recovers from it. His neck surgery won't be as serious as the shoulder surgery, but they have to clean out some bone chips from his neck. So, but it is being reported that there's a chance that the neck stuff could be worse than initially diagnosed. And neck surgery would require 3 to 6 months of recovery. So that's a really long fucking time to have the two surgeries.
You know what's bad? I hear all this and I think like, okay, good. Now they have no excuse. They can start pushing more people on the roster, but we're not getting that. We're still getting the same thing with Roman Reigns and I can't even say Seth Rollins anymore. So now it's Sheamus and this new shitty stable that we're going to have to deal with for the next couple of months.
Sound like a gay supervillain group.
Jeez.
The League of Legends. Oh, that's not even their name.
Like, we are the League of Nations. Steer us.
Oh, yeah, that was sort of just out of nowhere. They all just took a stand and had no reaction.
It's not even that. We've seen the buildup of this stable for a while now, actually. This, them actually making it official tonight, it just came out of nowhere and it made no sense, considering you had Rusev doing his thing with Lana earlier on in the night, and then Ryback came out. And Ryback hurt her and was like, okay, we're going to get an angle out of these two that's going to lead up to the pay-per-view.
They could do multiple things, though. That's okay. I don't mind that. I actually think they went in a good direction. But yeah, we'll get into the – we're going to cover that whole Raw thing in a few minutes. But the next injury we have is Zizi, who was injured at the Performance Center. They're just saying that he's expected to be out of action for up to 6 weeks. They said that there was a miscommunication in the ring, but we don't know exactly what the details are of that.
Somebody forgot his Twinkies and he had an off day.
I was waiting for it. That's why I kept that space there. I was like, something fat's going to happen after this injury. So that's why I paused. Then one of the most unfortunate ones, which we have to go back to, is fucking Rollins' injury.
Oh, boy.
He went on Instagram and he said, recovery essentials, huge thank you to, he plugged a few people. And he said, just push yourself and never settle. Hashtag rebuild. And I don't know if any, for any of you guys that didn't hear it, we have a short Rollins audio here of his recovery.
The progress I've made so far is pretty good. The rehab's starting to get a little tedious as far as the day-to-day repetition of everything and the slow progression. But every day is getting better. You know, I can see myself doing things in the afternoon even that I couldn't do in the morning sometimes.
Seth Rollins sustained an ACL injury as well as injury to his MCL and meniscus. A lot of times ACL injuries are isolated where there may be a small meniscal injury, but the fact that he completely tore his medial collateral ligament as well as his ACL really lends a more complex type of surgery and a little bit longer rehabilitation. Seth, at his time frame right now, comes in twice a day, which most people find hard to believe. And each session lasts about 2.5 hours. So he's actually rehabbing 5 hours a day.
The sessions are actually really brutal. The therapy sessions are really brutal, a lot worse than I expect them to be. I'm just getting around, you know, trying to, you know, live a normal life, even a sedentary life that I'm not used to. It's really frustrating for me sometimes. It's just not, it's a complete, 180 from the life I lived before.
He's very motivated. He wants to get back as fast as possible. He's really ahead of the course, what most people and even professional athletes have. We expect a full recovery, and we expect him to be even better than before.
I have great surgeons. I have great people here taking care of me, and I know we're doing all the right things to make sure that my recovery is as fast and I can get back in the ring as soon as possible, take my title back.
Yeah, we need him back, man. He's definitely one of the pioneers of this generation, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Really sucks. We have the injury bug in WWE.
Grin and bear it, I guess.
Next we have AJ Styles, who he suffered the same lower back injury, that sciatic nerve issue that he was dealing with back in October, and he wasn't able to compete at the November 28 New Japan Pro Wrestling event. He's still scheduled to wrestle Jay Lethal at next month's Ring of Honor Final Battle pay-per-view, so hopefully he's recovered by then, because Final Battle's a big deal. This will be the first time that it's not in New York. I've heard rumors that that's due to TNA. When TNA came there, apparently they paid them a lot of money to be in the exact same place where Ring of Honor usually has it. So now the people that run that place are expecting that level of money out of Ring of Honor, and they're not willing to pay it, so now we don't have them in New York anymore. Thanks, TNA.
Great job, TNA.
Bravo.
That's just a rumor, though. I can't really confirm any of that. If anyone has any info, you know, how to reach me, I'm very reachable. Drop it to me. I would like to know, though. But yeah, this will be the first time Final Battle won't be in New York. I'll watch it on pay-per-view. I'm sure we're going to report it on here. We always talk about all the big New Japan and Ring of Honor pay-per-view. So that's something we'll watch and we'll cover and we'll joke about. And You know how it works as far as that goes. Next on the list, we have Harley Race, who's having health problems. He pulled out of Saturday's WrestleCade event in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, because of health issues. He recently had a 9-inch rod inserted into his back due to spine issues, and he can't feel his legs now and has forced him to be in a wheelchair. So that's this week's injuries. They actually came out a little bit worse than Alexandria. You know, I mean, who do we really lose? Deanna, we had to lose. Deanna was bit, right?
Yeah.
Who else, though? No one, really. I don't want to spoil this too much because we're at this different show.
Yeah. But,
you know, it seems like the Walking Dead came to fucking Raw. You know, like it's the longest we ever spent on injuries.
It's funny because we didn't get Abraham in this week's episode. And then as soon as Sheamus came out this week, my usual response of, oh, that's where you were.
Mm-hmm. So next we have Brad Maddox, who retweeted me earlier. He was fired. The company wasn't happy about him using, during a dark match on SmackDown, he used the phrase cocky pricks towards the crowd, and that pissed people off in the company. So they decided to fire him.
That sounds like bullshit. From the minute I first heard that, I was like, complete bullshit. They've been looking for a reason to get rid of this guy, and they finally found it.
And that's bullshit, too, because you know what? I like that guy. He's a pretty cool guy, and like, there was no reason, like, he didn't deserve that. He's always been all right. I see him on the Candace and Joey show.
He pops up on there occasionally. Yeah.
Sometimes he's at the indie stuff, like PWG and stuff. You'll see him around, or he's just a regular dude. And like,
you know what? You know, and better for him. Go back to the indies. Go back to PWG. Maybe he'll pop up in Ring of Honor, and he'll get more TV time than he was getting in WWE. I know they had just recently put him in this shitty team with Adam Rose. So yeah. Adios to that, and on to better things.
Yeah, but still, I just don't like how they did Brad Maddox. That's not cool at all. But whatever, he immediately started taking indie bookings. But keep in mind, guys, that he's under the standard WWE 90-day non-compete clause, so he's not going to be on TV or pay-per-view for other wrestling promotions.
But didn't he find a way around that with the name change?
No, you still can't compete. They're not stupid. You can't just change your name. But anyway, for anyone who follows me on Twitter, if you don't follow me, just search Rick Darrow and I'll come up. But he's going to be going by the name Mad Braddox in the indies. Mad Braddox. And he already has like a graphic up for it and stuff.
I saw that. It was the Deadpool, him in the Deadpool costume.
Yeah, him in a Deadpool suit saying pew pew with his fingers. It looked good. I'm liking it, man. The guy's always been funny, you know. He's an entertaining, funny guy, and that's the reason they saw that in him, and that's why they made someone who was no one the fucking GM, because they saw he was good on the mic, they saw he was naturally charismatic and entertaining, and then they just gave up on him, which is a bad habit that this company has lately.
Very, very bad, yeah.
They're not going to just put some random fucking hoo-ha into the general manager role unless they knew for sure, you know what I mean? And then something changed, and I don't really like that happened.
I mean, they did put a random nobody in the general manager position back in ECW when they had what's his name, the one that pronounced Jeff Hardy as Jeff Harvey.
Oh boy, you're talking about Mike Adamley.
Yeah.
How dare you bring him up on the show that's already running long?
But I mean, it's a situation of where they learned their lesson, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. And then in other news, Solomon Crow has been released, aka Sammy Callahan from the indies.
Aren't you happy?
You know what, man? I've matured in the year of us having this show. And the old me would have probably fucking jumped for joy and threw a little party and stuff. There would have been an episode dedicated to this. But you know what? He's just not my style of guy. I didn't like him as Sammy Callahan when I found him in Evolve and when I saw him in the indies. I remember just thinking I'm not fond of him. The few matches of his that I was forced to watch was because I was watching the other guy, which was in Evolve when he fought Finley. Thinking they did like a 2 out of 3 or something, but whatever. I seen him a few times around the indies and stuff that I watched, and it just didn't really mesh with me. And then I'm also not a fan of like that deep indie shit where you have like fluorescent lights and you're hitting each other with fucking
You
know what I mean? You're trying to drown each other in quicksand, and after a while, kind of like, okay, is this still wrestling? Like, wait a minute, where the fuck's the ring? Why does he have a knife? You know what I mean? What's New Jack doing here? He wasn't even on the card. You know, once it becomes like that, then it's like, all right, let's time out a minute, you know? What the fuck is going on here? Let's all take a deep breath. So that's my thing. He's known to be in those kind of things. And it's just not my forte of a guy. And I didn't think he was going to fit well here. And I said that when they first picked him up. I'm glad we did a show now. So everything's recorded. But I said that shit. And it's funny how with WWE, it's almost like they seem to know what's going to work. They seem to know what's not going to work. And then they just choose to do all of it. So then exactly the things that I know are going to work, work. And the things I know aren't going to work, aren't. And then they just go, all right. It's weird. I knew he wasn't going to be a fit here, but whatever.
I wanted to give him a chance, and then as soon as he came out, I didn't like his look. His moveset was kind of awkward, at least to me.
I've never liked his look.
And then I think they were supposed to pair him with Seth Rollins' girlfriend. Like, she was supposed to debut as his sister.
Yeah, and like I said, at least it's a testament to WWE to show that they're not close-minded, that they would even scout for somebody like Sami Callihan and give him a shot. So I think that's cool, man. You know, like I said, it's just not my forte. Everyone has opinions in wrestling. That just wasn't a guy that was for me. The one time
he must have shown him something that we weren't seeing.
Yeah, the one time that he entertained me, which doesn't even count as wrestling, was on a Botchamania. Where, the story that they told, and it's him telling the story. He's fighting fucking Kyle O'Reilly, and he accidentally shits his pants. Sami Callihan shits his pants. Solomon Crowe.
Oh my god! I mean, it doesn't show or anything. That from like CM Punk.
It doesn't show or anything, but he has to communicate to Kyle O'Reilly during the match. I shit my pants, and it's just funny because I'm watching Kyle O'Reilly wrestle, and like you could just see by the look on his face, like exactly when the message was received, because he just looked more worried than usual as he was wrestling. Like he became
like, I don't
a better
body slam you, and this should get smeared on my chest.
He became like a better seller for a few fucking seconds because, like, he looked like he was suffering more than he normally would. Like I could tell in his face that the wheels in his head were turning. Like the fuck do I do? But to me, that was like a really funny moment.
You know what this reminds me of? That old the Dusty story. Where they were talking about sticking toilet paper up their ass before they go into the ring.
That's what they used to do. They used to call it a muffler.
Daddy, I forgot my muffler. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They take toilet paper and they roll it up. They roll it up their fingers and then take their two fingers and put it up their ass to stuff their butts. Like the bigger guys do this.
I don't even want to imagine what it's like having to dig that out after a match.
Yeah. But anyway, the bigger guys do this so that you don't get like ass juice on you, I guess. So yeah, this is becoming a really, really classy episode we have going on here. But anyway. So
welcome to Talk Brunch, new listeners.
Right, tell me about it. You know what, fuck it, if we're gonna go in, let's go all in. You think we could find the soundbite of that story being told? It's John Nord. Okay, so it's John Nord that's telling the story about Dusty's muffler falling out. So here we go, let's run this audio here.
1984.
What was the date?
March. We're talking about March, and I'm at the Allstate Center, Chicago, which used to be the Rosemont Horizon, Chicago. And you got Andre there. I work for Vern. I got Andre. I got Dirty Dusty Rhodes. I got Jerry Blackwell. And I'm sitting there. I got my football jersey on, all jock, and sitting there, but I'm shy. And I look out of the corner of my eye, and all three of these guys, Larry the Axe Handling, are taking toilet paper and putting it around their fingers and sliding it off, and they're wedging it in their buttocks. Yeah, and they're not putting it up, but they're wedging. And I'm looking out of the corner of my eye going, what the heck is that? And they did it because a real heavy guy's got hygiene problems, like it gets greasy and stuff, all that. Okay, I don't got to go no deeper. Long story short, they had a great name for it, and it was called a muffler. And right before, I'm wrestling Dusty. 10,000 people, I'm wrestling Dusty, and Dusty comes over to me and goes, Big Johnny, you got your muffler in?
Johnny, baby!
Big Johnny, got your muffler in? And I says, no, I don't think I need one of them. So I go out to the ring, I wrestle, now it's the end of the match, the finish, and I got a pile drive Dusty, and he's got a singlet on, and I go to bring him up, and I didn't get him, because I never pile drived a guy before. I couldn't clasp my hand because he was too heavy. So now I panic, and I look at Vern, and he's by the door going, and I'm going to screw up the finish, you know, my job, I'm young, my job's on the... So I grab the singlet, and I grab it up, and I just stretched it. But he didn't get up still.
So it was like a wedgie.
Yeah, yeah. So I dig up. Now I panic. I go, this son of a gun's going up now. And I grab him. I grab his butt cheek, And I go, you're going up. And I digged in with, like, my fingers in sand. And I just go, I pull it, and I pull his butt over to the side. His muffler fell out in the ring. No, it fell out in the ring. I looked down, and now I got him up. I looked down, the muffler's, like, brown, yellow, and red. And I go...
And why the fuck is it red?
Sick. Well, next thing I know, the heckler started in the first, second row going, what's that, you homo? You tampon fell out. Oh, that's you, right? Hey, what's that? Look at that. Wee-wee-wee. Oh, that's you, right? Now I'm just like, oh, my, this didn't happen. And I right before I pile drive him, I heard Big Dusty go, Big Johnny, my muffler fell out. Boom. And that was that. I got to go finish right now.
Sounds good.
Oh boy.
You gotta love those stories, man.
Those are the stories you're not gonna hear on Table for Three. So anyway, Friday night, Solomon Crow returned to AAW in Chicago and he attacked their champ, who was Eddie Kingston. And this is literally right after Eddie Kingston wins the title, because the main event was a triple threat match with Eddie Kingston, Ethan Page, and Trevor Lee. So Eddie Kingston wins the title, and then Solomon Crow runs in and attacks him. So he went straight back to the indies and back to work.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. In other news, we have Nicole Bass, who's in trouble. She's trying to raise $5,000 on GoFundMe.
I was about to say, what'd she do? Steal some more ham and shit and beauty cosmetics?
Aw. But she's quoted as saying, I don't want to end up homeless and I'm being evicted. I'm not just looking for handouts. So if anyone wants to hire me for an appearance, I'm available. I would appreciate anybody that could help me so that
an
I can
an appearance
move.
Of what?
And she says, right now I'm really scared. And, yeah.
I'm out of funny ham and lipstick.
Yeah, it's funny. You kind of work for my segue. I was going to kind of say, like, the comments underneath this were really insensitive to her situation. Like, I know we joke around and stuff, but Jesus Christ, like I've said about Nicole Bass before, like, I don't want to see her starve or be out in the street. Like, those are shitty things. Like, people are asking her to get a regular job on the comments, and I guess I can somewhat agree to that. But some people just aren't cut out for that. She may not have the mold or the circuitry within her for that. She's a big, gigantic person. What the hell can she do? I'm not even being offensive, but... maybe what she can do is what we've seen her do. She can make appearances, bodybuild, be in wrestling
she
stuff.
She could be a bodyguard at a female club or something
some,
like
some
that.
Some people
don't know. There is
don't
work
know
out there for everyone.
All right. I hear what you're saying, but I'm just saying, you know, it's just a shitty situation.
Mm.
You know?
I get that. I'm just saying, like, I hate when people sit there and it's like, hey, like, book me. Like, if it's not working out for you, and we've seen other wrestlers do it too, and it's just like, all right, my career is over. It's not working out for me. Let me find a fallback. And they end up being successful. I think yeah. Undertaker has a job as a realtor for when he retires.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Sell furnaces if you have to, you know? That's a private joke. This is private Talk Brunch staff joke, guys. Sorry I left you in the dark. I have to on that one. But, you know, fuck it.
Furnaces in the winter, air conditioners in the summer.
So the ex-NXT creative assistant Rob Naylor had some complaints about WWE. He was tweeting. Let me bring these up here. He was saying, it's not a Triple H will save the day either, because the writers still seem to write for him and Stephanie too, the whole audience of three deal. It's going to take a highly influential writer, I know too, or someone to put all of the line and talk to Vince about how bad things are. The record low Raw rating makes me think of that terrible overseas Raw 97 that quote unquote changed things and had Russo. I know, talk to Vince. And he goes on for a while. He does several tweets here. He says it's all got to change, presentation, look of the show. Everything needs to be changed. New blood needs to be pushed differently. There needs to be a complete overhaul from done and how the show is shot and produced. It's so samey every week, same template. As someone who loves wrestling, it just sucks to see the pool pissed in quite often. Even when he worked there, he rarely watched it. He would come in on Tuesdays complaining to the mod, was later told he wasn't a good soldier. He was just saying they just need a new, fresh approach. I mean, I agree with a lot of stuff he's saying. He says that he has no doubt it'll get better because the NXT shows in Brooklyn are really refreshing. And he saw so many great talented people come through developmental and spend painstaking amounts of time working with them. Sucks seeing them in languish. And now with an entire team of chefs, nobody has autonomy except for Vince. And there's just 50-50 everything and nobody stands out. And, you know, it's just basically, it's a lot of logical stuff that he's saying, really. I would say go check out the guy's tweets. He's spot on about it because, I mean, things have gotten bad. I think when we get into Raw, which we're going to do very quickly, you're going to see that a lot. I think they're sorry. I think today's show, they're kind of sorry. They're trying, at least. We can all agree they're trying, right?
They're definitely trying, yeah.
Yeah, they are trying.
I mean, things aren't, it's not like all of this is their fault. A lot of this shit just happened to them, and I think they should have been more prepared. But, yeah, I like that he analyzed it a little bit more. But who knows? Who really knows, man?
Live and learn.
Live and learn. In other news, 87,000 people ordered Hell in a Cell on traditional pay-per-view, which is up from 77,000 for Night of Champions in September. So people are still buying those pay-per-views strong. They haven't lost much pay-per-view money, and they gained a lot of money.
I was literally sitting here the other day, and I was like, who's actually paying the full price for pay-per-views nowadays when you have the network, $9.99 a month? Do the math. You're saving more money that way.
Yeah. And then Jim Ross spoke a little bit about Survivor Series, and he said he's not surprised that there's been a great deal of negative feedback on the Survivor Series, and he assumed that no matter what WWE did with the world title at the end of the night, that would happen, and that he always endorsed the new champion being an authority person, so he wanted a heel to win the title while looking strictly at the big picture, and he feels he got his wish, and he's fine with Sheamus being the champion for now, and he says, no, Sheamus is not hot, obviously, but he will work hard and represent the company in a professional manner, and that the key element to get Sheamus hot, it can't be done without with him being booked in this 50-50 manner, being a cowardly heel, without him getting on a roll and winning big matches via hook or crook, preferably by cheating or showing no remorse for his tactics or physical style. So he's on board for this for now. I mean, there's not really much of an alternative.
He kind of took a turn with that tonight where he got attacked by Roman Reigns, and rather than like cowering off, he turned and instantly said, like, hey, I'll face you for the title tonight. But then they backpedaled on it again. Anyway, yeah. And he needed help.
Yeah. And Mitch Nicholson tweeted about Sheamus. He said that some idiot threw a bottle at Sheamus right after his DQ loss at WWE Huntington and hit him in the head. And he's pretty sure the guy was arrested. So that's really shitty. And I'm also hearing that due to stuff like that and the Survivor Series threats and stuff, that WWE's been locking down security. At their event in Huntington, West Virginia, the fans were asked to arrive early and to go through all these different levels of security. They were told to, anyone who had purses or backpacks were told to put all of the contents from within those purses and backpacks into a big clear plastic bag and then bring the purse or backpack back to their car. So they didn't let people in that had the purses or backpacks. And WWE plans to have that extra security to all of their events going forward.
Well, I mean, like, you figured from the last idiot who threw the briefcase at Roman Reigns and he got taken out, that these people would learn their lessons, but I guess not.
Yeah. It's something, man. It's something. But I mean, we have to do something. It's going to be a pain in the ass though to not be able to bring a bag in with you though, you know, especially for those people who aren't coming by car that are traveling by public transportation and they tell you, leave your backpack in your car. What the fuck are you supposed to do?
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Like when we go to the house shows out here in New York, I don't normally go with a friend. I get there by the train and then get off and walk the rest of the way.
Yeah, when the lady and I go to Madison Square Garden for the pay-per-views of the Roars, we literally do the same thing. And yeah, we usually do have some sort of a backpack or something. So that's a pain in the ass, but hopefully it doesn't stay that way. We'll see what happens. We'll have to just sort of see how it goes.
I'm assuming they're going to have some type of thing where it's just like they check your stuff. Like they'll check your bag and they'll be like, oh, you don't have anything here that could be harmful, so go ahead.
Yeah, hopefully. In other news, Mick Foley was also disappointed with the Divas match last week. And he said that he was disappointed that they weren't given the time that they needed to steal the show. And that 6 months ago, him and his kid drove 12 hours to watch them at TakeOver, and it was worth every mile. And why deprive Raw fans now? And he's been saying that the creative flow is stagnant and that it's been stinking for a while. And, you know, it's being reported that talent and staff have been frustrated about the current direction of the show. And that many are saying that it's just not fun anymore. And they're just showing up to work. And several within the company are concerned that Vince is not concerned. So Vince doesn't
surprise
me.
I mean, we've seen it for the past couple of months that, and it's been the ongoing joke that Vince is out of touch, and it doesn't seem like he cares to get in touch.
That's not good. Then just hand the reins over, man. No pun intended. Oh, boy.
Got a mouthful of something to say? Let the guys know. Be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to us on YouTube. TalkBrunch.com.
All right, well, let's talk about some of the events that are recently transpiring. Let's talk some NXT and some Raw before we wrap things up here. NXT this Wednesday was pretty interesting. We had the Finn Balor contract signing, where Michael Cole was put in charge as the stand-in general manager due to...
Yeah, this is to William Regal's surgery, right?
Yeah, William Regal's absence because of his surgery. And Finn Balor comes out, and then Joe comes in. And one of the things I like is this was one of the best contract signings ever, because Joe literally comes in, doesn't say a word, doesn't look at Balor, signs the contract, and walks out.
And just leaves. Yeah, and Balor's screaming at him. He's like, look at me, look at me. Like, I really like that.
It was an epic contract signing. And I kind of felt they botched it at the end when Joe attacks Balor from behind when he gets to the top of the ramp. Like, they should have just left it alone where nothing happened there. And that way we could say not every contract signing ends in an altercation.
Has to go with the old cliche attack. Right. Yeah.
So I was really pleased. But then once Balor got to the top of the ramp, it was like, ha-ha! You know, he shows up and it was like, all right, guys, same shit as always. But one thing that I do like is after the contract signing, the fact that they replayed Joe signing, they were like, let's take another look. And it's literally just an NXT replay of just him coming in the ring and signing. It was like, really? That's the replay? Oh boy. But they wind up fighting up the ramp and stuff and into the ring, and Balor does the drop kick on Joe, and Joe chokes out Balor with the coquina clutch, and they leave Balor drooling on himself in the ring. The other match we had was Dash and Dawson against the Vaudevillains, and it was a great match. Really good chemistry. Everyone in this match does really well. I don't like the Dash and Dawson gimmick, but the guys know how to work. Vaudevillains.
I like them. I don't know. They cut a promo backstage a couple of weeks back, and I was like, okay, I can see these guys potentially becoming like the next IT thing. I don't like that they put the titles on them so quick, though.
Yeah, and their music is a little out of place too, you know?
I mean, would you rather have them come out or Blake and Murphy every week?
Blake and Murphy kind of grew on me a little bit. Like, the gimmick works better now.
So you like their entrance now? With the Pokemon seizure lights.
They toned it down a little bit. You got to admit, they toned it down. But yeah, it was a good match. And Aiden English gets pinned by their double knee 3D thing that they do.
I like that attack, yeah.
And Enzo and Cass wind up getting involved in the whole thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's like a whole bunch of chaos and shit going on there. We have Asuka and Dana Brooke had a segment. Where Emma ambushes her, like, dressed in all black, like she was.
I didn't get that. Yeah,
and she puts her into the dilemma. She comes out like a ninja Emma.
Then takes off the black top to show that she's wearing her wrestling gear under it.
Yeah, like, surprise, it's me. Who else would it be? She doesn't have any other friends. That's the only friend that she ever comes out with. You know, great revelation.
Yeah, it was.
There,
I guess she was hiding. She was sitting in the crowd, so that's why she had the whole black thing to help hide her from the crowd.
Mm-hmm. I suppose. So then we had Apollo Crews. Yeah. So then we had Apollo Crews versus Jesse Sorensen.
Did you pick up on the TNA jab?
No, what was that?
It was pretty much the commentary team, and there was like, look, it's Jesse Sorensen. And there was like, why do you care? And he was like, 'cause he's here. And he was like, where else would he be?
And you see a subtle jabs, right? Subtle little jabs there. But yeah, that dude needs to be careful. But, yeah, he came. He did his thing. He's a persistent guy, huh? He's going to just keep wrestling.
Good for him, man. You see what I'm talking about? It was like, if something doesn't work out for you, you can go someplace else and you can make it work out.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. I can see it in this case. So anyway, Apollo Crews goes over with the sit-down powerbomb finish. And that leads us to the main event, which was Bayley versus Eva Marie. This actually wasn't a bad match.
Okay. You want to know why it wasn't a bad match?
Do tell.
because they kept you distracted with all the chaos that was going on, that Eva didn't really get to wrestle long enough for you to see how bad she was.
You notice that they seem to be doing some sort of a WWE main roster versus NXT thing going on there, because they had Charles Robinson come out as the ref. And it
right,
like-
right. So it was like a whole, so there's no controversy, because in all of Eva's matches, there's been controversy the last
couple
of weeks.
Right, so we brought the Raw ref and we brought the Raw people here, but then you notice that the Raw people almost made Bayley lose the title.
Mm-hmm.
It almost felt like they're trying to create some inner roster conflict there.
This is going to be their new invasion, since no other company can step up to the bat.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to build on it, but yeah, I did notice that they did have a lot of different things going on. Eva did okay, though. She needs to sell a little bit more. She doesn't sell that often. There were lots of good false finishes. Nia Jax interfering the entire time. And Bayley went over with her top rope super belly to Bayley, or Bayley to belly, whatever.
Belly to belly.
And then Nia Jax, after the match, beat up Bayley and hit her with two leg drops.
It works for me, you know. Like, I like her teamed up with Eva.
Yeah, it's okay. It was a decent NXT. They're setting things up properly. Nothing wrong there. And before we get out of here, there is Raw. And good old Raw, which I was pessimistic going into. You guys saw the tweet. I thought this was going to be a nightmare. Yeah. I was like, oh, man.
They started it off right.
Yeah, of course. They had New Day open the show because they know that that's the only thing everybody likes.
As soon as New Day came out, I was like, oh, ratings were bad last week, and they're trying to like bring it back up by opening up the show just like this.
Yeah, and then they did this huge Dragon Ball Z fusion dance, Sheamus introduction.
I lost it when they did the fusion dance.
Yeah, they're total geeks, man. I love it. And then Sheamus,
you know, that's
came
their
out.
That's Kofi's his Twitter picture too. Him and Xavier Woods doing the fusion dance.
That's fantastic. And you know what? I got to give them credit for a valiant attempt. And it was an attempt to make us like Sheamus by sticking him with the only people that we enjoy. You know, because every week people go, the only thing that was good was the New Day. So like, hey, Sheamus, go out there and shuck and jive with the New Day. You know, have a little bit of happiness in your life.
He did a better dance than Barrett.
Yeah, I have to agree with that.
Yeah, good gyrations, right? Good gyrations from that guy. I like when he said, forget Austin 316, because Sheamus 515 says, I just whipped your arse.
Oh, God.
I just kicked your arse.
Awesome.
And then he came out later with the 515
with a shirt.
I was like, holy shit, they made that quick.
This guy is serious, man. They were ready. And so Sheamus celebrates on the top turnbuckle, and then he turns into a Superman punch out of nowhere from Roman Reigns when he gets down. To a pretty decent crowd reaction. Like, Roman Reigns, I gotta admit, this is normally, like, the crowd will be foaming at the mouth when this guy comes out, but they managed to make us hate Sheamus so much that when he did the Superman punch, there was a good pop there.
It worked.
You know, and then Roman Reigns leaves with his title, which was really fantastic. I like the smiling that he did at the top of the ramp, where it was just kind of like, ha-ha, I have the title.
Yeah, he pulled a Dean Ambrose on that one.
Yeah, it's very good. And then we have Reigns backstage celebrating with Ambrose and the Usos, and of course Triple H and Stephanie come to ruin the fun, and
Mommy Daddy.
They demand the title back, and I like the way he tried to emasculate Triple H by handing the title over to Stephanie, not Triple H.
Do you think they're trying to build up for a Reigns versus Triple H, since we can't get Triple H versus The Rock for Mania?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I gathered from there.
Definitely.
Yeah, so then Stephanie tells him that in order to defeat Sheamus for the title, it has to be in under 5 minutes. So we give him that 5 minute challenge thing. And we move on to Tyler Breeze against Dolph Ziggler, which was a very good match, great chemistry. I'm glad Tyler Breeze is fitting in with the main roster. You and I have always said, going all the way back to FCW before NXT existed as developmental, I know I've said this on here before, but you and I have always said that back when he was Mike Dalton, before they gave him the Tyler Breeze gimmick, that this guy's good. He's going to do good. We heard.
I don't like that he loses so often, though.
It's jarring to me anymore.
Because we saw him undefeated in NXT for so long, and it's like he's taking a loss every other week now.
Yeah, the beauty shot was one of the most protected finishers in NXT, because if he hit you with that, it was lights out no matter who you were. And here it's a little bit different. But I still think that he's being used well, and he's doing good matches. He still has to pay his dues. He's not going to come in.
Yeah. It's not like he's putting on shit matches. He's putting on great matches. I don't know. It's now that I'm older and I'm not a little kid and I don't root for the faces anymore. I'd like to see the heel win.
Yeah, he got he gave a lot of comeuppance to Dolph Ziggler when he first came out.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So it's like they're not shitting on the guy. I think it was done well. But yeah, like I said, good match, and Ziggler goes over with the super kick. Like I said, good chemistry from both guys involved. I'm actually surprised at how well Tyler Breeze fits into the main roster.
I mean, he's had enough time in NXT to pretty much, I guess, hone in on his craft and perfect it.
Mm-hmm.
He's not somebody that's new to the company or just like new to wrestling. He's been around for a while.
Yeah, he definitely has. So hopefully this will continue. He's been here for years. When we think about it, it hasn't felt as long as he's been here. But
yeah, he's not jumping in here like a Roman Reigns. He's been wrestling longer than Roman Reigns, so it's only natural. He was a name before he was out there. He's not as big as, like, say, AJ and the Bullet Club and the rest of those guys, but he's a name. He's like a Ricochet, where Ricochet's been around for many, many years. And while he's not a top draw, like, people, they know his name, and they know, like, when he gets in there, he can perform and he'll put on, like, a grade A show.
Yeah, but he's always been in the WWE bubble. That's the biggest difference with Tyler Breeze. Yeah. So next session, we had The Miz TV with Rusev, and Rusev, accidentally being as great on the mic as he is, called Miz Michael. And it was just like, you're supposed to call him The Miz. Like, you can't just call him his backstage name. That doesn't work, Rusev. So we can't call him Tongue Pac or whatever his name is, right?
You know what? I don't know. Like, I heard the Michael thing and I didn't know if that was just him going off the whole, oh, I'm going to be an ignorant heel and call you Michael on purpose, or if it was an actual slip up.
Yeah, I don't know. It wasn't a major thing.
Yeah, because you remember he was introduced to us as Michael Mizanin, and then he dropped it to The Miz. So I guess in the lore of WWE, we do know his first name is Michael or Mike.
But I think it was a fuck up. We'll see. We'll see when it come up. But Lana comes up. She says that this is the happiest day of her life, which I kind of thought was weird, because you would think that the happiest day of her life would be the day he engaged from the Instagram picture, not like the day that she announced it on a random Raw.
No, she got her TV time back, so that's why she thought she was like in
the
shit house.
It's the happiest day of my life. I thought I was going to be released.
They told me they had plans for this, and it's the greatest day of my life.
I thought I was going to have to be Mad Lana. Oh, boy. But, she talks about how all the past stuff is forgiven. And then she says, for the record, I never went all the way with Dolph. And even Rusev is like, for the record, I did not go all the way with Summer. And all I'm thinking is, don't say go all the way. Look at you guys. You're adults. You don't have to say we didn't fuck. But you could be like, I wasn't intimate with him. Say something more Russian. Why would you say all the way?
Think about that.
Go all the way.
Calling the shots and keeping it PG, man.
No, that's lame. So that was bad. And then they got the yes, you did chance. And they start making out in the ring, and Ryback comes out and he says that he heard that the Zigman did go all the way, and then they get some sort of a mild pop to that, and then he says some shit about how this isn't some episode of Teen Wolf, but since I don't watch Teen Wolf, I didn't get the reference.
You didn't get the reference. I didn't get it either.
He said this is Monday Night Raw.
Like, and it was kind of like, whatever.
Yeah, it was weird. It was just unusual. It's like, all right, dude, whatever you want.
You watch Teen Wolf on your free time.
Yeah. And then that leads to Ryback versus Rusev. Decent match. Ryback used that missile drop kick, which is funny to see a guy that weighs that much coming down from up there. He drives Rusev into the steps, and in turn, the steps hit Lana and knock her down. And Rusev gets counted out in the process of checking on Lana. But Rusev, for the first time, seems more concerned about Lana's well-being than he does about the loss.
And when he did that in my head, I was like, okay, so this is how they're going to punish you. Lana's going to get into some type of harm every week, and you're going to continue to job.
That's a great story for him. I'm sure they'd be happy.
Like, that's your punishment. Like, you guys wanted to go and pop the bubble on the whole engagement thing and mess up our storyline. We're gonna mess up your career.
Very creative. That's why we call them creative. Look how creative that is. So Triple H and Ambrose have a backstage encounter where Triple H congratulates Ambrose for winning the triple threat match on SmackDown to become the IC champ's number one contender. But then he says that if Roman doesn't beat Sheamus in under 5 minutes, both Roman and Ambrose will lose their title shots. And Triple H says that he wants to show Roman that his choices not only affect him, but his friends as well. And then after that, we get an NXT commercial during Raw. And I'm bringing this up because think about how far back, almost a year ago, I was saying that they need to do that. Remember, I used to always say, put some NXT commercials on
if
during
you,
Raw.
Yeah, if you want to promote NXT, put it on during your own programming, because I felt like a lot of the casual WWE like fans that's watching the program, they don't know what NXT is. And it's funny, like, I've seen people, like, when I step into a GameStop and they have the WWE 2K16, like, you can play it. Like, so you could face strangers. Like, they'll come in and they'll pick up the game and then they'll pick characters and they'll see Enzo and Cass and they'll be like, who the hell are these guys? Or they'll see the Vaudevillains and like, who the hell are these guys? They don't know the NXT guys.
Yeah, well, you know what? They've gotten a lot better with their advertising. They were smart to advertise it with the one free month without saying that you get this month specifically free. You get your first month free. I'm glad they changed the wording of that. And also, I do like the fact that they're advertising to get it now, because in 2 weeks, you get the next pay-per-view, the TLC, because in doing so, if you do get it now, that means that in 4 weeks, you're going to have to pay them again for the next pay-per-view. You're on like a bi-weekly type deal, you know? But I just think it's smart advertising. They need to get their name out there more on USA, use that time, and they're doing it. So that's cool. And I just figured I would mention that, since we're always complaining that we never see them reference NXT on Raw, and now they do. We've come full circle. The product has evolved in some ways, as much as we criticize it.
Yeah, like the only time they directly mentioned NXT was when Kevin Owens first popped up, and he actually had the NXT title for the month it was that he was feuding with John Cena. I think, and then like when they started bringing up people like Neville and Sasha Banks, and there was like, oh, you know who that is? They're from NXT, and that would be as far as it would go.
Exactly. So next we have the Dudley Boys, who come to the ring with a bunch of cover tables. And this was stolen straight from TNA. We saw this on Impact when Bully Ray came out with the different tables and he pulled the cloths off. It was actually done better in TNA because he pulled them off individually and was like, this is a table for you. Whoosh. A table for you.
But it was weird because they came down with two tables. And then I was like, oh, the Dudley Boys coming down with tables already. This is cool. Yeah. This is cool. And then they cut to the commercial break. And when you come back, there's four tables in the ring with the cloth on it.
Yeah. Maybe they went back up and got a couple more. You know, that would make
sense. Which it wouldn't work because the two tables that they came out with, they weren't covered. It was just two random tables. So it was like, what happened to those two tables that they came out with?
Maybe they got sheets too. We'll ask the live people. If anyone was live there, we'll figure this out.
I don't know. And then, like, my eyes caught that the Strowman's table was the biggest. I don't know why. I found that hilarious.
Very observant for them. Yeah,
it was a little bit wider.
A bigger table for the bigger guy.
Yeah.
So all four Wyatt members' names are written on the tables, if you listeners haven't figured that out already. And then out come the Wyatts, and they accept the challenge, and Wyatt sends his three guys down. But then Tommy Dreamer comes to save the Dudleys, and they candlestick the Wyatts away. And, you know, at this point was when I told you that this was a good first hour, because that was just the first hour of Raw. And
Yeah. And I totally marked out because I was sitting here expecting Spike.
Yeah, I was expecting Spike to come out too. But hey, Tommy Dreamer's just as good.
Yeah, very good. I have no complaints there.
Dare I say better? Because it's more believable that he could put up a fight against the Wyatts other than Spike.
Yeah, I'd like to see them pull someone else out. Pull out either Spike or RVD and have a 4-on-4.
I didn't even think about RVD, but yeah, it would work.
Do something crazy, you know, I could totally go for that. So anyway, it was a decent match. The Wyatts get disqualified. And what the hell happened there? It looked like what was the bell rung for again?
I think when Bray went through the table.
Was that what it was?
I thought that happened after.
Yeah, that happened after. Somehow they got this. The Wyatts got themselves disqualified. Maybe they stood in the ring too long. I don't remember if it was a break.
Yeah, it was a lot going on, and then the bell rang, and then, yeah, like they turn around and Bray gets knocked into the table.
Yeah, and then Bray is on the other side of the apron and Bubba rushes into him and pushes him through the table below. And pretty good table bump. Hopefully he's not hurt or anything because he absorbed a lot of the mat.
Nah, he's fine. I mean, he got up, he was walking away. He's fine.
Yeah, and then after that we had Goldust against Alberto Del Rio. And it was a decent match, short match. Del Rio went over with that corner stomp thing that he does now.
Yeah. It stood out to me that they both were wearing black and gold.
Is that possible to give him in the 2K16, that corner thing that he's doing?
I don't know if you could do it as a finisher, but I know it's in there as a regular move.
Yeah, we got to find that out. I was just curious.
But anyway, I have it paused right now. I can check that out.
Yeah, so after the match, Del Rio does the cross arm breaker on Goldust, and Swagger runs in to save him, which is still building that feud up.
Can't wait.
Yeah, so backstage, Becky wants a match with Charlotte, and the reason behind this is because during the pre-show, Paige randomly encounters Becky, and she kind of throws some implications towards her where she says, oh, you know, it's okay that you're just a friend, you know, that she's the champion, you're just a friend, it's not a big deal. It's not like you're not noticed. Like, you kind of start planting the seed of doubt in Becky's mind. So this is sort of following up that angle where now Becky wants a match with Charlotte, and she wants it to be like old times in NXT, and Charlotte agrees under the condition that her dad, Ric Flair, can be at ringside. And then he woos his way onto the screen, and, you know, all of that happens. Which leads to the Lucha Dragons against the Usos with New Day at ringside. Sin Cara botched the setup onto that double team monkey flip that they do.
Yeah, that was sad.
Slippy feet. Slippy feet. Don't be that other Sin Cara, Hunico. You know, we have faith in you. Don't start picking up bad habits, you know. I know who's under that mask, man. Don't make me have to check.
Yeah, we all know.
Yeah.
And then this match became a series of middle rope dives, each looking more dangerous than the last. You know, where it looks like if someone doesn't catch you, you're going to kill yourself out there. But I guess that's the whole theme of what makes it exciting. And New Day interferes, causing a double disqualification. And then they say that since it was a double DQ, they don't have to defend their titles against either team. And they laugh their way up the ramp to end that segment.
Which to me, I knew was obvious setup for a triple threat at the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, that's...
Yeah, very formulaic. And then the Usos and the Lucha Dragons complain to Stephanie. And she grants them both a triple threat match with New Day under the condition that Roman Reigns beat Sheamus in under 5 minutes. For the same reason, so that he'll learn who he's affecting and stuff. Afterwards, we get Brie Bella against Sasha Banks, which was... It was a surprisingly good match. Brie Bella is looking better. She's
getting better, yes. Or is it that what's-her-face is so bad that we're not appreciating her more?
No. Brie is improving. She's looking good in the ring. I'm giving her shit.
But like I said, like I noticed very minimal things. As soon as she started doing the yes kicks better, I was like, okay.
Yeah,
she
and her improving. Grappling is better. Her ground game, even though a lot of it is rest holds, that's the thing. Brie has to work in little fits and jerks. Like little, she has to pace herself differently. Do a couple of spots, get back to the rest hold, regroup and shit. But now that she's doing it, it's not the best look, but it looks better. She just looks better in the ring. I just see overall improvement in her form.
It's a gradual come up. Give her time.
Yeah. And you know, that's what we say. Whenever we see improvement, we don't judge people, even if they're still not the best, as long as they don't stay the same. Then that's when we'll start to shit on you and make jokes. And it's like, hey, the hell are you doing here?
Right. You know, right. Because we even gave Cameron like some props for her fight with Asuka the other week, like about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, she's looking good. Team Bad distracts her, which leads to Sasha catching her with the bank statement to go over after a lengthy match. Very well done. Next, we had Roman Reigns against Sheamus. The thumbnail to this episode is probably going to be Sheamus holding the title up upside down, because that really made my day.
It happens so much, though.
It doesn't happen that often.
I mean, not just by Sheamus, like, but no, I've seen people, like, they hold the title upside down. And they've actually interviewed some wrestlers, and they ask them, like, why do they do that? And they go, you know, it's just in the heat of the moment. You don't realize you're doing it.
I saw somebody in the crowd
with the title upside down.
It's one of those things that you got to concentrate, you know, like, for it to make sense. Like, just the other day, I was watching Survivor Series, and I got so excited watching one of the matches that I fell up, you know? Like, I forgot where down was and where up was for that brief second, and it was
you just hit the ceiling, huh?
Just fucking straight up. It was like, shit, you know, you gotta keep focusing, man. Up is that way. And down is this way. So, yeah. I'll never buy it. You know, we've complained. We've shitted on people on here that have put signs upside down.
It's like you brought this sign to the event. Your one job was to hold it up the right way, and you fucked it up.
Yeah, exactly. Terrible. So anyway, after that, we have the match, and it was a pretty good match for what they could do with 5 minutes. And at the 37-second mark, Rusev interferes and attacks Roman Reigns, and Reigns winds up winning by disqualification, which gives the Usos their tag title match as well as Ambrose his. But again, Roman Reigns is asked out of the title. And everyone else keeps their shots. And Sheamus is basically out there draping his big-ass arms around Lillian and boasting.
Did you see the look of disgust on her face? And she even turns at him at one point and goes, what are you doing?
Yeah. I saw
it. I had the same look on my face.
And then he introduces the League of Nations, which is him, Barrett, Del Rio, and Rusev. And they're like, we are the League of Nations.
You know that meme I always send you with the little girl sitting in the back seat, like, what? That was the look on my face.
Yeah, and then they stand there all proud and stuff. Like, yeah, four of us.
Yeah, and Del Rio's like, why am I here?
Seriously, you have this whole storyline with you and Jack Swagger with Zeb Coulter, and it's like, fuck that storyline. You're in the League of Nations now.
For no reason at all.
For no reason.
Yeah, because he was looking around like, yay, I'm part of the League of Nations.
Yeah. You know what? I do like stables, though, so I'm going to be open-minded and give it a chance.
No, no. This is going to be as bad as Union.
Oh, Jesus.
Holy crap. Brought it back to Union. Oh, man. I would play the soundbite if we weren't running over already. We got to get out of here. So then we get, well, did we finish this Roman Reigns Sheamus thing after that? Yeah, that was it, right? He just basically, the Usos and Ambrose come out after that.
They run out to help him, and then he tells them, like, back up because he wants him one-on-one. And then when he climbs up on the rope, Superman punches him in the face.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then after that, we get an awesome New Day Cyber Monday WWE Shop Zone commercial. You know, a lot of thoughts going into this advertising.
Like, did they go backstage and dress for this, or was this taped before because of Xavier Woods' hair?
Yeah,
is how he had it at the pay-per-view. So they might have pre-taped. Taped this at the pay-per-view.
Definitely pre-taped. So then we get Charlotte versus Becky Lynch with Paige on commentary. And there was a lot of chain wrestling between them. Also quite a lot of talking throughout the match. Like, I can see Becky communicating to Charlotte. They need to tighten that up a little bit. Charlotte fakes a twisted ankle and used Ric Flair as a distraction and pinned Becky. That was awesome. You got to give them credit for that one. I totally did not see that one coming.
Yeah, it was at the point when Paige kept going on and she was just like, oh, she's not as innocent as you think she is. And then the whole thing where it was like, why does Rick need to come down for this match? It's not even a title match. Like, I knew something was in the works there.
Yeah, she proved that she was the master. They should have made it a title match just to make there be more on the line. And that'd be a reason why she would do that. But anyway, backstage, Becky approaches Charlotte. And Charlotte told her that it was tough love and she just wanted to teach her about the bigger picture. And then when she leaves, Paige comes out from behind her and says, sorry for your match, but at least your friendship wasn't affected. Once again, planting more seeds of doubt on her about this whole thing. Then we get Adam Rose.
I would have liked it if James Storm popped up and said, sorry about your damn luck.
I bet WWE would like it if James Storm popped up at this point. But next we get Adam Rose doing the Rose Bush, which is sort of like a Tosh.0 TMZ type gossip thing in the WWE that's sure to flop. But that's what they're doing with him now.
No love for Adam Rose.
More or less made a bunny stew for the... for what happened on SmackDown.
Let's not forget what his entrance music was for anyone who watches Main Event.
You're about to play it.
Yeah, for anyone that watched Main Event. That was legit his entrance music on Main Event. So I guess at this point, he'll take what he can get. Because we talked on here about how that was like, you guys are burying him when you have someone come out to that. That shit is worse than the right to censor to come out. Like, can you imagine out to that? You know, like.
What's worse, that right to censor or the Union theme?
The Union's not as bad as right to censor, man.
Right to censor shit sucked.
Yeah, it really did. So we get that. And then after that, we get Titus O'Neil stumbling into Cosmic Wasteland again and putting antlers on Stardust and so on and so forth and harassing the guy and singing songs about Stardust getting run over by a reindeer. And Stardust gets angry and he's like, that is not the original lyrics of the song. And he's all pissed off, injured. And amusing little segment there. I like the way Stardust Mark Hamill's it up.
Like I said, I like to see Titus be successful with this, because remember, he was doing all this nonsense on the second screen, and we never thought we would see him evolve from that.
We were the only people covering it back when there was the second screen experience. We would always be like, and next segment was Titus O'Neil on the second screen joking around. Yeah, for a long time, man. Those were the days. It's funny to think about how long ago that was. Crazy. But anyway, the next match is the League of Nations versus Ambrose, Reigns, and the Usos. And New Day comes out making it a 7-on-4 handicap match in favor of the heels. And in the middle of the match, I believe it's Jimmy Uso hurts his knee.
Mm-hmm. Good old Jimmy, yep.
And has to be taken off of the match. And I'm assuming that was like a kayfabe injury, right?
Because of Jimmy, I'm not too sure.
Imagine if he fucked his knee up again.
Again, and he just came back, right?
Yeah, that would suck.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see about that, as a matter of fact. But Sheamus goes over Ambrose with the bro kick. And after the match, Rusev continues to attack Ambrose. Reigns attacks him. New Day jumps him. Sheamus kicks Reigns. Eventually, the heels get the upper hand. And then the heels all pose together at the end. The New Day and the League of Nations standing in the ring victorious.
I was waiting for you to slip up and say League of Legends.
Nah, this episode was ain't. I won't screw their name up anymore. Yeah, so overall it was a good Raw. Once again, they apologized for everything they put us through with Survivor Series and the Raw after that, you know. They're trying to get back on track. That doesn't change what I said, though. We're going to start coming out here and covering Ring of Honor and New Japan, watch some other shit, and that way we don't, like, jump off of a bridge, Kilgrave style, thanks to watching too much fucking Raw, you know?
Step off.
Yeah, exactly, you know? That is not what we need, man. We don't want to be about that life. We just started year two. You know, there's no reason we need to go out like that. Oh, boy. But overall, I'm happy. It's been a good episode, I think, guys. We covered a lot of stuff. We got to go back into the Ronda Rousey a little bit and talk about that.
Yeah, that's never a bad thing.
Nah, everything's been really cool, man. You know, I'm glad that we made it this far. Crazy stuff. Surfer, once again, thank you for coming on. And doing the pre-show with us and talking about Walking Dead. Don't forget, we still have some other stuff we're doing with him and with a lot of the other guys. A lot more collaborations. We're still doing more Jessica Jones episodes. That's an ongoing thing, so don't forget about that. It's just been a little bit busy. But we'll get it together. We'll find time to get all of this content out and stuff. A lot of people were asking me if we can come back here for the Jessica Jones episodes. And I said, yeah, they'll all be here. So people are waiting and looking forward to that in anticipation. So, yeah, we'll get on it.
Yeah, stay tuned.
Yeah, and we have Jen here. Jen, you've been your first time on here. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
Oh, yes, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and you guys are going to have to just keep trying to piece together who Jen is and what Jen knows and dissect her on your own. There'll be no bio.
Yeah, that's what I do and stuff like that, so stay tuned.
It'll be a lot more. It's an exciting new year. More things to come, more of our other buddies, more collaborations, more making fun of TNA since they're not going anywhere either, apparently.
Look, I'm still giving up. I'm not watching it anymore.
He's completely abandoned the ship, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm done, man. Unless you tell me, like, you gotta watch this event because something ridiculous happened, like more ridiculous than normal, then yes. But other than that, no. I'm not gonna subject myself to that.
On that note, we're out of here.
See ya.